Here it comes again. Oh.
Better than snow.
Yes, it is better than snow. Hi, everyone. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. And this is our show for today. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. If you were listening closely, you heard Steve Bertrand during the newscast use the word thorm. Did you enjoy that? I sure did.
I think it was unintentional.
Did I say thorm?
That's a real thing.
Thorms.
That's a thunderstorm.
And
you know who I think invented that phrase?
Tom Skilling?
Any guess? No. Predecessor of Tom Skilling's.
John Coleman?
Yes.
There you go.
I'm almost positive he invented that word.
No,
and
I
it's
think
a real
so.
Word.
Thowers as well.
Right.
No, he did. He would say Thowers and Thorms.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. He did.
That's funny.
He did.
And he'd spin his little board.
I loved him, man.
Do you remember the commercials? If you're new to Chicago.
Let me finish it for you.
Well, he would. There were commercials for him. He was a longtime Channel 7 weathercaster and then started up the Weather Channel.
Yeah.
But his commercials were him on top of the Hancock building, just like almost like a singing in the rain, just singing and dancing around in circles.
In a thorm?
Wasn't it after they built the tower then? So the ghosts were gone.
Yeah, by then the ghosts
what
were
ghosts?
Gone.
That you would watch your TV and you could see, you know, the reception wasn't great. So when they built Sears Tower, they put the towers up there and used those. And he was up there dancing, saying, I can see clearly now the ghosts are gone.
Right, well,
I'm not kidding you.
No, I know. You're bringing back memories that make me laugh.
That's all true, right? That's all true. And he's still around,
yes,
isn't he?
I checked on him the other day.
You did. That's so nice of you.
I mean, on the internet.
Did you bring him anything?
A lot of times they'll say, if the weather's inclement, check on the older people, the elderly. And Wendy does. She checks on everybody.
I brought him raindrop sugar cookies.
She just checks on the elderly forecasters.
That's above and beyond the call of duty. Wendy, thank you for doing that.
You're very welcome.
That's much appreciated. But he was like the first of the, I think, here in Chicago anyway, he was the first guy that made it more than just weather.
Personality
it was,
weather.
It was personality.
He was really funny.
Yeah.
Still probably is. I don't know. He didn't make me laugh when I checked on him.
Now, I have to tell you this, but I have to tell you this without using the person's name because I don't want this.
Oh,
I don't want any repercussions
this.
Of this. But there's a major TV personality here in town, somebody connected with the news, that told me that the problem with John Coleman was he or she met them a dozen times over the years, and John Coleman wouldn't remember his or her name, even though they met a dozen different times.
I'm like that.
That many times?
I'm pretty bad with names.
Really?
I can
do that too,
Bill.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, I don't think I've ever gone a dozen.
You're pretty good with names, although you lie to me.
Why?
Because you're so good with names. If I forget someone, I'll go, what are their names?
Name.
And I don't trust you.
I do tell you different names.
I really don't trust you for anything
that
anymore.
That guy, his name's Margo. Are you sure? Yeah, that's Margo. Margo Spaulding. That's that guy's name. That is one of my favorite things to do.
I don't like it. We were at another radio station, too. This is, I don't remember much. I don't know what it is. My long-term memory is not really that good. But there, we were at another radio station doing mornings, and go ahead with the story.
I did on more than one
occasion.
Look
at, he knows it right away.
This is something I did the first time, and I enjoyed it so much that I did it several times, and it worked every time. When people would come into the radio station to do business with the sales department, they would have to wait in a waiting room. And I would always tell you that they were here to see you, that they're huge fans of yours, and that they would like very badly to meet you. And you would go out and you would very proudly introduce yourself, and they would just stare at you.
No, they were nicer than you were. They went, oh, hey, nice to meet you. And I'm like, what brings you up here? Oh, well, I have a meeting with your boss.
Right.
Totally unrelated to the show.
But you would think, like, for a lot of people, by the second or third time, you'd be leery of that, but you fell for it every time.
I trust you, which is my first mistake. I still trust you more than I should.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust me anywhere near as much as you trust me. I wouldn't. Some quick business from yesterday. I have to ask, we had Dennis Ryan in yesterday. Dennis is with Digital Kitchen, and we were all talking about the Super Bowl ads. And then Kevin, as he always does, took a picture of us. And it's the saddest picture of me that's ever been taken.
Can I just ask a question? And Kevin, you are witness to this because you take all of our pictures. Very rarely do you smile. You're either talking,
right.
You're making a weird face.
Yep.
Am I right on this, Kevin?
Yeah, 90% of the time. Wendy looks great and smiling, and you have like an open mouth or something.
I know, like, what are you doing? Do you not know the picture's being taken? Kevin's right in front of us.
I know, but I... we only have a short time with these people, and I like to get all my stuff in. I like to talk to them and find out what's going on in their world. And what I would suggest is, and I think I've told you this, Kevin, I think I did, you should pose with them and then just use like a stock picture of me.
It's like, kind of like a stock picture of you every time, because either you're scowling, talking with your mouth open.
Well, the one yesterday, and I don't
you
even remember this.
Like a mugshot.
Furious. I look like I've been wronged, don't I? Like, if I were to snap at some point and do something just awful.
You're the one to do it. All money's on you, by the way.
That's the picture that they would use.
We have a little pool around here. Like, who's the one who's going to snap?
Oh, and Grzanich didn't win that pool, seriously?
You and Grzanich were tied.
I put all my money on Grzanich. Everything.
Stop that. You're going to make
but
him snap.
It does look like if I did, like if there was some incident where I'm in jail, they would use yesterday's
mugshot.
Picture. Yeah, that would be, well, not even a mugshot. Just this is when we realized something was wrong. And
I
that would be
at
that
it last
picture.
Night.
Oh, I look, and I don't remember ever looking that. It's not even, it's
yeah, this
sad
one's
and angry,
yeah.
And I don't understand.
Usually it's just, huh?
I know, that's usually the one. Wait a minute, what's that weird device Kevin's aiming at me? Like a ray gun or something? No, it's a camera.
You do look puzzled
I'm
every
always,
time.
Yeah, it always gets me. Do you know how many times I've been shopping somewhere? Sometimes it's just like at Mariano's or sometimes it's in a mall. This has happened 80 times to me, and people will come up and ask if I'm either lost or if they can help me. And I'm not lost. I'm just walking around. But people always come up and they go, is everything okay? And I go, yeah, everything's okay.
So
do you want us to call someone?
You have resting puzzled face like some people
I
have?
Yeah, I think my natural look is one of bewilderment, I think.
That's good to go through life like that.
I guess it is. I imagine it is. I don't know.
I can't find it.
It's on the Facebook. But I should come up. There should be a new official look for me because bewilderment's not working because all... It's insane how many times people have come up and they reach for my hand and they want to take me to customer service. No, I'm all right. I'm just looking at shirts. I'm okay.
What are you doing? Your Dennis Hopper pose?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. That's crazy, isn't it? All right, let's take a quick break. If you want to call us, and there are people online, we'll do our best to get to you. I promise 312-981-7200, Spill and Wendy on WGN. We were just talking about John Coleman, who kind of was the beginning of personality weather on television, a longtime weatherman at Channel 7. Don't worry, he's still with us. But Steve, during the news, mentioned the word thorm, which is a word that he invented. It's Coleman speak for thunderstorm. Thunder plus storm equals thorm. But he also invented a couple of other words. Casey's on the line and knows some of those words.
Hey, Casey.
Hi. I came up with a couple words myself.
Oh, these aren't from him?
No.
These are from you?
Mine.
What are yours?
Yeah. Like a freezing drizzle, that's a frizzle.
It would be a frizzle, yes.
And kind of like a snow-sleet mixture, that's sneet.
Oh, sneet is also a good word. Well, he had snain. John Coleman used to say snain, which was snow and rain.
He did not.
I swear to you.
He would refer to the forecast for the boonies, too.
Right.
I remember that.
And that was short for boondocks.
Like the suburbs,
the outlying
correct.
Areas, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah
very good, Casey.
Neat.
You have a future in as being a word starter.
Outstanding.
You'll make big money. Thank you, Casey.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye.
Bad phone. So it was Thorm, and what was the other one you said, Steve? Thizzle?
Did you do Thower?
Oh,
Thowers?
Yeah. See, that one's not...
A thunder
Thorms
shower.
And Thowers.
Yeah.
Wow. You made a
Wendy,
living at that.
It was the 1970s. We just needed something to get us through.
I sent Kevin a picture of him on the Sears Tower that commercially can show you.
The one I seem to remember was him almost like Julie Andrews did in Sound of Music, where his arms were upraised and he was
right.
twirling around,
right.
singing and spinning, right? Is that what you remember,
spinning?
Too?
No,
spinning.
No, spinning. I can see clearly now, yeah.
Yeah. And it was just to let us know that the signal was better at Channel 7, right?
Yeah, don't you remember that you'd see the ghosts on people?
Yep.
Yeah, I guess I do remember that. That's a lovely picture. John Coleman's greatest hits.
Yeah, that's it. Wendy found the picture.
Sent it to us.
I think today's television viewer wouldn't stand for that. But back then, just because reception wasn't that good, it was before cable and satellite, we just settled for it. If you watched any of the like channels 32 or 44 or something, you never got a clear picture once. It didn't happen.
Or no. Channel 2 was terrible, too.
Awful.
No matter how much you moved the coat hanger that was on top of your TV, it never helped.
Right. What was the worst part about being the youngest kid? You had to go stand.
You were the remote.
Hold the coat hanger.
Yeah. Wendy, go change the channel. Oh, come on. I want to watch this show.
Do you remember those giant, like, I think if my kids saw this, if I held up one of what I'm about to describe, they would have no idea what it is. They'd think it was something from outer space. The giant, it was a box with antennas on top of the television.
With two knobs on it.
And you can fiddle with that thing all day long. You just never got perfect reception. But I swear to you, I think if either of my kids saw that and I said, what is this? I'll give you $1,000. What is this? Not a chance.
An old video game?
Right.
Because there were the knobs and those knobs didn't even really work. I think they were there for decorative purposes. It was to help you get a better reception, but you'd turn the knob, and it was kind of the same thing on every position.
I also remember, for some reason, when we'd go to my grandparents' house and one of my aunt's house, on the antennas, there was tinfoil.
Better reception. Wrapped around,
and did that work? I don't think that worked.
That's what people put on their heads sometimes.
Right.
You get a better signal.
I guess you would.
You know, I think I'm getting phone scammed, by the way.
What happened?
I got a weird text this morning telling me that my delivery will be coming today.
Yeah.
And no one has delivered anything.
Delivery from where?
The
place you ordered from or not?
I don't even know what it is. It's through DHL, and I don't trust anything anymore.
Yeah. Have you ordered from them in the past?
Well, DHL is just like a delivery service, not unlike FedEx.
Yeah.
But I don't recognize what this is. And it's, you know, I check things on my phone. DHL Express is delivering something from FumanNet, not .net, FumanNet.
And you know who they are.
No, and I just Googled, and a lot of people are trying to figure out who that is.
Yeah.
And then I got the scam where somebody calls you, and they say, can you hear me?
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to say yes, because if you do, they record you saying yes, and then they come back and say you owe us money, and you're no way.
Really?
And they said, really? Because we have you on tape saying yes. How do they prove that's me? I heard about it in the news. Police say answering it could make you the victim of a scam. There's been a warning going around in Virginia and Pennsylvania, and here's how it works. Police say you receive a phone call from a number you do not know, which I'm an idiot because I still answer those.
Do you? Yeah.
I know if it's something important, they'll leave a voicemail, but I always feel like I'm going to miss something. I know. I'm an idiot. It usually has a familiar area code because you can really determine what that little thing says when you're calling.
Yeah.
Police say after you answer the phone, a person or an automated recording on the other end of the line introduces themselves and their business. This kind of warms you up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of pause and go, can you hear me? And it totally happened to me 2 days ago. No, I just hung up. I didn't say no. I didn't say
anything.
That
was the one that...
I actually said F you and hung up. No, I said nothing.
Yeah.
But did you know about the scam? All right, well, don't answer your phone. And if somebody says, can you hear me, unless it's us calling you, unless you know it's us, don't say yes.
I'm still not going to answer. If I see your name on it, that's all I need to know.
I know.
All right, a quick break, some news, then more show. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder. You know how to reach us, right? 312-981-7200. We'd be thrilled to hear from you. Blue laws, for people who are not aware, you've heard the phrase blue laws, right?
Mm-mm.
You've never heard of this? It has to do with the legality of businesses being open or not being open on a Sunday. Sometimes businesses are
Like
told,
car dealers?
Car dealerships, perfect example. You can't, even though it would seem like
that's
a perfect
the best day.
Wouldn't it be to shop for cars?
And did we learn on the show that at one point there were a few that were open on Sundays, but then it was kind of like, well, somebody would come by and go, we're not open on Sundays, so you shouldn't be open on Sundays.
I'm trying to remember who. Yeah, somebody alluded to that.
Yeah, and so that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Because really, Who has time during the week to buy a car? Saturdays, right. Unbelievably busy.
And they call it a family law, family bill, so dealers can be home with their families.
Right.
That's really a load of poo-poo.
It's just protecting them from competition from people who want to be open on Sunday.
It doesn't make sense. Now, there are businesses.
Hobby Lobby. And that's
Chick-fil-A.
For church reasons.
Are Chick-fil-A still not open on Sunday, or have they changed that? Maybe they are open on Sundays now. I know for a while they were also.
I don't think they are.
Oh, they aren't either?
Because that's always the day I have a taste for it.
Yep. So sometimes blue laws are self-imposed. Sometimes it's, you know, by decree of the county or the state. Well, in North Dakota right now, they're having hearings regarding their blue laws over which businesses should and should not be open on Sundays. And of those that are open on Sundays, they're trying to determine what time they should be allowed to be open, because Sunday is supposed to be a day of prayer, right? All right, so now you get these two guys that are state representatives. Their names are Bernie Satrum and Vernon Laning, and they spoke to the assembly there in North Dakota to try to convince them that the blue laws must be intact, that on Sundays, that's a day, well, I'll let them explain. Now, keep in mind, it's 2017 when you're listening to Mr. Satrum and Mr. Laning describe why exactly businesses should either be closed or open late. Listen.
I don't know about you, but my wife has no problem spending everything I earn in 6.5 days. And I don't think it hurts at all to have a half a day off.
Spending time with your wife, your husband, making him breakfast, bring it to in bed. And then after you're done with that, go take your kids for a walk.
That's how Sundays are supposed to be spent.
Bite me, both of you.
The women need to make breakfast for the guy in bed. That's the way it should be. You shouldn't be out shopping.
Don't you think they're kidding?
No. Although that one guy did get one applause, like when he expressed his belief of what a Sunday should be. You heard somebody go, and then just go, oh, wait a minute. What did he say? I'm not going to applaud for that.
That was sort of funny. Like, my wife has enough time to spend my money. That's sort of funny.
You give him that one? All right, we'll give him that one.
Sort of.
We'll give him that one.
But the other one, oh, my God.
I know.
Make you breakfast in bed and then take the kids
yeah.
for a walk.
Yes.
Dad of the year.
Right.
Husband of the year.
Put those pearls on, Mrs. Cleaver. I want you looking pretty.
Oh, that makes me sick.
How about that?
Chick-fil-A is closed on Sundays, but not for that reason.
Now, isn't that interesting? Because you would think, and I understand their point. You know, they have a religious bend to themselves over there. So they say on Sunday, you and everybody who would be working for us needs to be worshiping or spending some time worshiping.
It's family time. I like it.
But it's so curious to me from a business standpoint. Like you would say...
Look at it a different way, though, Bill. Not that you should be worshiping. It's like, no, we are.
Yeah,
so we're not going to be working.
And Sundays, typically, for me, growing up, we would go to church. Then we would go to my grandma's and have like a big Italian pasta dinner.
Yeah.
So it was like Sundays were a lot of times
yeah.
family days.
Yeah.
So,
right.
I
but
mean,
you could have, it's possible to do both, right? I mean, you could say to your workers, you decide if Sunday's not a day that you want to come in.
Yeah,
you
know, but they don't. They own it, and they don't want to be open on Sundays.
Yeah,
they don't want to have to take people away from their families.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Starting out in radio, I worked every holiday and
yeah.
weekend during my whole social years.
Right.
And, you know, it would have been great if they said, oh, the radio station closes down on Sunday so you can spend time with your family. I'd be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all for, in fact, I really respect businesses who voluntarily say we're going to close and lose business because of what we believe.
There is right. something to that.
I just don't like the government protecting businesses.
Right,
by
exactly.
That gets,
passing
that
a law.
Gets strange.
What about
right.
the breakfast in bed part? Or taking the kids for a walk? Are you cool with that?
By the way, breakfast in bed, one of the most overrated activities you could ever engage in.
The you
crumbs.
Cannot. Yeah, it's really, I mean.
It's a mess.
Even on those silly breakfast trays that, here, honey,
I know
with
it
a little
looks
flour.
Great on Hazel.
It
if you're
does,
watching Hazel,
yes.
it looks like, oh, I would like to have that going on, but it's not good.
No, and when I was sick as a little kid, my mom would bring up a TV tray.
With toast and ginger ale?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes chicken broth.
Yeah, if the situation called for it.
That was awesome.
Right.
I wish somebody would do that for me now. Wouldn't that be great? And
yeah.
a lot of Italian restaurants are closed on Mondays because they are so busy all weekend.
Right.
There are several
restaurants. It's not
restaurants.
Just Italian
restaurants. No,
a bunch
I know.
Of
there's
restaurants.
A Mexican place. in LaGrange that's closed on Mondays. And again, when do I want tacos from them?
When they're closed on Monday.
Yeah.
That's inconvenient.
All right. Steven wants to jump in. Hi, Steven. How are you?
That's why they have. I'm good. That's why they have Taco Tuesdays.
Right.
Right.
Hey,
exactly.
You figured that out, yeah.
Hey, I just wanted to comment. I work 6 days a week. It's just why I want to spend time with my wife.
But that's your choice.
It is.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank
hope
you.
She's not listening,
no,
Steven.
I hope not.
Not your real name.
Of course not.
Thanks, Steven.
Can we find out really quickly from Wally why dealerships for cars are closed on Sundays? You know the real reason, Wally?
Yes, I do. In the mid-50s, I don't know, Bill would remember. You're too young, Wendy. When
thank
Foreman
you.
When Foreman Motors was open, and their father and I think there were four brothers.
Yeah.
And they had the car dealership, and a guy was trying to get his car repaired, and he would come in, you know, he'd have to take the streetcar over there, and because his car was in for service, and he finally got ticked off, and he went there because he was only off a half a day Saturday and Sunday, and he went there Sunday because his wife was B&M in the ear, and go there and tell him you want your car back, and one thing escalated to another, and I believe three brothers got killed.
What?
Yeah, and the mayor, Daley,
yeah,
was alive, and that was it. He says no car dealerships will be open on Sunday. It's a day of prayer and family after this incident happened.
But I think this is a national thing. I don't think this is just local.
No, there are some companies. There are some states.
Oh, are there where you can buy cars on Sunday?
Yeah, it's set by state. The Illinois ban actually took effect in 1984.
Oh, all right.
Thompson signed
it. All right.
Well, Wally, thank you for calling.
There could be something to that.
I don't.
Yeah, he did do that.
All right, and we don't have time. We're going to be talking to Bridget Carey, but Randy, you got to get your comment in here.
All right, awesome. Yeah, I just think it's wrong that state and local government should have the right to tell us what day we can pray and what day we can't. And yeah.
It does seem a little. It does seem a little out of hand if we
if the government gets involved,
right?
Businesses can decide, you know,
individually if you own the business.
All right, thank you, Randy. And I would like to do a plea to Hobby Lobby to open on Sundays because that is when I'm in my crafty beaver mode, and that's what I would like to do is go get my crafting
it's
things.
It's when you need a glue gun is on a Sunday.
I'm hearing you.
All right, a quick break. Some news. Well, not some news. Bridget Carey from CNET coming up.
It's a Tech Tuesday, Bill. I look forward to Tech Tuesdays, and I look forward to talking to Bridget Carey, CNET senior editor. How is it going?
Hey, it's going good. Keeping us busy lately. There's always something weird going on.
Well, what's name some weird stuff. I like the weird
stuff.
The
weirder the better.
How about flying cars?
I want flying cars.
I don't.
You don't want flying cars, Wendy?
Enough accidents on the roadways.
Oh.
Uber actually has outlined a plan to make it their next mission. They're investing in it. So although we always joke about, like, where are our Jetsons, where are our flying cars, they're working on it. So they hired a former NASA aircraft engineer, and they are very positive about how this could happen in 10 years. At least that's what they're, you know, telling everyone.
That's a pretty short time, yeah.
Yeah. So maybe testing can take place by 2025. The point is that they're not alone. I mean, this is one of those dreams that, like, really big tech companies like to put a little money into for R&D. Like, for example, Larry Page at Google, he personally funded a flying car startup company back in 2010. And then there are some, like, small companies, like, that are actually, you know, trying to make this happen too in Silicon Valley. So aside from self-driving cars, I guess now we want self-driving flying cars.
Well, and Uber drivers are a lot of times people who need part-time work and are trying to supplement their income by driving Uber cars.
Yeah.
Is this going to be for retired pilots or part-time pilots?
Yeah, right. Like, I think we got to work on the whole certification thing.
Right.
Bridget, do you think with flying cars, it's the first one across the finish line wins? Is it whoever invents it first? Are they in the best shape or not necessarily?
Well, they'll get a lot of fame, but I mean, think about where self-driving cars are. You see a lot of small little movements, and suddenly every car manufacturer now is practically putting research into it. So you have Tesla, who, you know, right now, if you have a car, you can, like, you know, have it just start driving on some roads straight with your hands off the wheel. Does that mean Tesla won the race in self-driving cars? I don't know. And same with Google. You saw they made some prototypes already, but we're not in the seat yet. We're not really riding them. So I think regulation kind of ends up being the thing that holds everyone back. And then once some company does make a big leap forward, you're going to see everyone racing to be among, you know, the first, I guess. Although I think that takes another kind of level of people, you know, and trust. Right now, everyone's still afraid to go into a self-driving car.
Yeah. Although, did you see one of the Super Bowl commercials showed a self-driving car? Just one of the scenes was a self-driving car, and the kids were in the front seat just talking as the car just kind of glided past. And you go, oh, if it looks like that, yeah, let's bring it on.
That's the idea, right? Being, yeah, like being able to just commute and not have to deal with it. And
the Jetsons.
That say you really shouldn't be that afraid because, you know, humans, you know, are really bad at driving more right. So than a robot, if you know. So you got to think about that stuff.
Because think, first of all, if there are driving cars, you're going to have accidents midair, and then those cars are going to fall to the ground. So you're going to, like, double the amount of people injured in an accident.
Well,
I know that's not the plan.
Don't bring this up during the pitch meeting.
They already have self. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, there are autopilot modes on things that fly already.
Yeah, that's true.
It's about thinking about that drone technology and having it just kind of work already. And people are going to crash on their own if they were driving too. So
yeah,
if they can find some way to do what George Jetson did, he drove to work and then his car folded up into a briefcase.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, parking is a pain in the butt. It really is.
I just want to travel in a tube, like just like suck me up and go.
Like in the bank, at the bank, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, that was a Justin thing too, right?
Yeah,
got to where I needed to go. I just went in the tube.
All right,
too messy on the hair. I got to tell you.
No.
All right, I have a question for you. I know that Twitter first came out with Periscope, and I remember when it happened here on this radio station, everyone was very excited about it because they could go, oh, my God, we could go out to the courtyard and film something live. And then Facebook Live took off, and everybody's doing it, but now YouTube is in on the deal.
Yeah, so you know, they're the video king, right?
Yeah.
And now they have something where their most popular accounts can just instantly go live. Everyone who follows them gets alerted on the phone. And the point is to go live on the phone, you know, on their mobile app. And it's only for people who have at least 10,000 subscribers right now, but they will open it up to every average Joe as long as they have a channel that can have advertising share revenue because it's all about money. They're finding that they've been testing this out to hundreds of people since the summer. And it's got a lot of potential to make them a lot of advertising money because when you get that alert, you just want to jump in and see, well, what's going on? It's going to be live. And on top of that, though, I think there's something else that's more interesting in this whole live space on YouTube. For live videos that you're watching in the moment, you can send money. You can send a tip to the person making the video to get your comment seen first. It's called a super tip or something. Like it's basically you're just going to pay $5 and make sure that they can see what you're going to say because people who are going live, they probably are getting hit with so many comments you just can't read it. It's too fast. And one person who tested it out already because it just launched today said that when he went live just walking around talking about what he was doing at Target, in the span of about a half hour, he made $900 in tips.
Oh, my God.
Is this a celebrity or just a regular guy?
Well, these YouTube people are celebrities now, aren't they?
It's a little bit of both, right? He's a regular Joe, but he had a big following already. And these are people who just, you know, subscribe. They love to see what you have to say. And when there's hundreds of people in a chat, essentially, you know, just writing comments, the fans go, hey, I have a question. I really want to be seen. They'll throw in a buck. They'll throw in $5 maybe. And the people who pay the most get to be seen first. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe he made $900 just walking around a freaking Target. Just talking.
And that's in addition to what he's getting from YouTube.
Right. That's in addition to any advertising revenue because they do the ad share on there. And these people make, I mean, the top people on YouTube if you add them all up, just the top 10 or so, I mean, they're making $70 million.
I know.
You know.
And they're like 16-year-old pimply kids playing video games and stuff.
Yeah, or they're showing, they're unwrapping presents and
toys. The unboxing.
Yeah, the unboxing stuff, you know, like... It makes you think about, well, could I do that? But I mean, we're talking, you have to really establish yourself for a while. So yes, you can do it, but you have to really, get a big audience going, to at least, get to that level. But yeah, anyone can try it.
Bill, you are missing the boat. First of all, when you're on YouTube later, Bridget, we should tell you about this. You know, Drake Bell from Drake and Josh.
Mm-hmm.
Bill hung out with him. They did a video on YouTube about Bill's toy collection, so you should watch that. Just Google Drake and Bill or whatever. And Bill, there's your in. You could be like Bill the Toy Boy.
Oh, would that just, be for all ages or just
yeah.
for adults?
Well, boy toy would be for the over 30 crowd.
All right.
But you should check out that video, Bridget, because you'll see Bill's toy collection and you can see Bill hanging with Drake Bell from Drake and Josh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, thank you, Brad. I'll bet you $10 Bridget never looks at this
she
video.
She will look at it.
All right.
Bill's not a YouTube sensation yet, but
not
pretty
yet.
Soon.
Not yet. I'm going to put on a Chewbacca mask.
Yeah, there you go. Piggyback off the other sensation.
Well, thank you, Bridget. We appreciate it. It's Bridget Carey, everybody. She's over at CNET.com. Go there and learn things.
Thank you. Thank you, Bridget.
Bye, Bridget. Yeah. We'll take a quick break.
She'll look it up. I promise you.
You think she will?
Yes.
That video, by the way... on his site, got over 90,000 hits
in a week.
How did that happen?
Because he's Drake Bell.
Is that what
I'm
it
sorry,
is?
You're trying to put yourself.
No,
in the
it had nothing
here.
To do with me.
Drake Bell has a huge YouTube audience, and now that's what I'm saying. Now's the time to capitalize on that.
I guess
you're Drake's friend, Bill.
Sell it that way.
Yes,
all right, I'll sell it that way. Some news is coming. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. 312-981-7200 if you want to call in, text in. You can do that at that number. Here's a story that kind of started a little bit yesterday and then continued throughout the day. Let me just quickly catch you up. On last week's episode of Saturday Night Live, they did a skit where Melissa McCarthy portrayed Sean Spicer. And a lot of people loved it. It was really funny, I thought.
Can we hear a little of
it? Yeah, sure.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
I just think it's amazing. This is Melissa McCarthy as Spicy.
Back to you. As you know, President Trump announced his Supreme Court pick on the national TV today. When he entered the room, the crowd greeted him with a standing ovation, which lasted a full 15 minutes. And you can check the tape on that. Everyone was smiling. Everyone was happy. The men all had erections. And every single one of the women was ovulating left and right.
All right.
This was
so
awesome.
It really was. I've heard people say it's the funniest sketch they've done on Saturday Night Live in
Could
years.
Be.
The casting is fascinating because you say to yourself, if you're a writer and you're writing it, it would have stood up on its own because the writing was really sharp. But a masterstroke to have Melissa McCarthy come in and play Sean Spicer.
Without mascara, I mean, I'm sorry. It's hard for a woman to go out without mascara.
Sure.
And she really looked like him.
She looked enough like him. She sounded enough like him. Of course, it's a parody.
Yeah.
You're going to, like Saturday Night Live has done for decades, you take what is real and you stretch the truth a bit.
Embellishment.
Yeah. And I, the real Sean Spicer doesn't go up to members of the press and hit them with his podium. That doesn't happen.
Maybe he should.
Maybe that'll start happening. All right. So that takes place on Saturday. Yesterday, Sean Spicer explains that he was not happy with the portrayal, that he thought it was too mean-spirited and too over the top. He's not happy.
Why doesn't he just, excuse me for interrupting you,
yes.
but why doesn't he just go, it was kind of funny, and then it's all over with?
Not only is it... over with,
you like
but there'd
him.
Be a respect where you say to yourself, oh, all right, he's in on the joke, something that Donald Trump hasn't seemed to have been with Alec Baldwin, who every time Alec Baldwin shows up on Saturday Night Live portraying Trump, Trump tweets, the show's downhill, it used to be funny, it's not funny anymore, stop watching it, it's awful. All right, so now, yesterday, as the day progressed, and Sean Spicer already came out and said, I didn't think it was good, she was way
she was too
mean.
And well, she was mean, but
you had to be for that scene to work,
yes.
Right? She had to be mean.
I know he isn't like that. He's much more mild-mannered, but
right.
Like I'm saying, maybe he
right.
should switch a little bit.
Well, now Donald Trump has also spoken out on that particular sketch.
Did he think it was funny?
You'll be shocked to learn he did not. He did not. And his reasoning for it is fascinating to me. The thing that upset Donald Trump the most about the fact that they did this scene on Saturday Night Live was not that it was over the top. It was not that it was mean-spirited. It's that a woman portrayed Sean Spicer.
You're kidding.
That's what upset him.
So we were talking about that up here, and Suzanne Muschens, we're going to talk about on the show a little bit later.
Yeah.
If I'm Lorne Michaels and I know I'm under his skin,
yeah.
I have Kate McKinnon open the show as Donald Trump.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Play it up. If you
Although
know,
she's the best Kellyanne Conway.
She's a great Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah.
Isn't it, as a quick side note, isn't it interesting that Saturday Night Live is getting all these accolades right now for two characters that are, they're very important. I mean, there's nobody in the world getting more attention right now than Donald Trump. And of course, Sean Spicer plays into that in being the White House press secretary. But you go outside your stable of regulars. You go to Alec Baldwin and you go to Melissa McCarthy to play those two characters. I don't remember SNL ever doing that in its history. You'd always go in-house for
yeah.
those.
For a returning character.
Right, right.
And Leslie Jones played Samuel L. Jackson as Samuel L. Jackson.
Curious. Over the top. Too mean. No.
Do you know how many times women have dressed as men? I mean, look at Monty Python. Look, this has been going on. Men
dressed as
women.
Right.
For all these years, and now all of a sudden a woman can't dress as a man? Peter Pan, that's all I got to say.
Right. Mary Martin and Kathy Rigby, if you're listening.
And Sandy Duncan.
And Sandy Duncan for a little while. Well, they've done, in the past, I remember a couple of times, I remember Mary Gross playing Pee Wee Herman.
Yes.
Doing a very fine job of
really
it.
Really good job.
And I know there have been others. I'm positive there have been others.
But that bothers President
Donald
Trump.
Donald Trump is very upset about this. The Saturday Night Live spoof of White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer hit a nerve with the White House spokesman and with President Trump, according to a new report. Trump doesn't like his people to look weak, a top Trump donor told Politico 2 days after Melissa McCarthy portrayed an aggressive Spicer, firing insults at journalists, chowing down on gum.
That was great.
That's very funny. And busting out a super soaker during a press briefing. But
also great.
Yeah, it was very funny. But President Trump was most bothered by the fact that Spicer was portrayed by a woman. This according to the report on Politico.com. Spicer tried to laugh off the spoof, even offering some advice for McCarthy's impression on Sunday. He told Extra that he knows that the show was funny, quote unquote, but felt that McCarthy could dial back, specifically that she needs to slow down on the gum chewing. There were way too many pieces in there. That, again, was the joke. It's not funny to put one little piece of gum in your mouth. It's funny to take a whole thing of gum and pour it in your mouth and keep talking while you're chewing the gum.
You know, it's Saturday Night Live,
right.
Which many people didn't watch for years. Why is our president so obsessed with that?
I think it gets back to his constant need for approval.
Which Howard Stern came out talking about his good friend Donald Trump, and Howard last week said, I wish Donald never would have run for president. That job is going to be detrimental to his health. This is what Howard said, and I'm quoting, I personally wish that he had never run. I told him that because I actually think this is something that is going to be very detrimental to his mental health too, because he wants to be liked. He wants to be loved. He wants people to cheer for him. I don't think this is going to be a healthy experience for him.
Yeah.
He went on to say, this is a very difficult job, Howard Stern continued. And Donald Trump, he really doesn't want to be loved. He really does want to be loved. And that drives him a lot. I think that he has a very sensitive ego. Good call there, Howard.
I think he may have found something in that, yeah.
And when you're president, people are going to be very, very critical. It's always happened.
Right.
And then Howard goes on to say, I do think he's sincere in wanting to help out, and I think he's sincere when he says he has the answers, but he stepped into a situation that's really not a win for him. And Stern believes Trump didn't even really want to be president, but he just wanted to get a couple more bucks out of NBC for The Apprentice.
Oh.
Howard went on to say
wow.
that, too.
Well, that played out strangely then.
He also said that Trump is secretly hoping it can be proved that Hillary won so he can stop doing his job. I don't believe that one.
He had me for a while. He lost me on the last one. But again, we mentioned this the other day. Was it yesterday, maybe? If you look at Saturday Night Live, every president has been lampooned. There's not a single president that we've had from the early days of SNL with Gerald Ford, where he kept bumping into things. Gerald Ford didn't do that all the time. He did it once in a while.
He fell off walking down a plane. That was one time that I think just was in the news. You have Norm MacDonald, who was holding the pen with Bob Dole all the time. Every president and political...
Well, Dole's never...
No. I know what you mean. Every political figure has been made fun of.
Everyone.
That's what they do.
Right.
I like that Saturday Night Live has caused the teenagers, my kids and your kids, to be more into politics.
Without a doubt.
So it's doing its job.
Yeah. Not if you ask the White House. The White House is not happy.
Don't ask them anything.
They're not happy right now. All right, we'll take a quick break. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's me, Bill Leff. It's her, Michael Winslow. We're at 312-981-7200. Talking about the White House not pleased with Saturday Night Live. Sean Spicer was portrayed by Melissa McCarthy. Sean Spicer's not happy because he said it was mean, over the top. Donald Trump's not happy because it was a woman, and he thinks that shows weakness.
That's just cray-cray, Bill.
Yes, it is exactly what you said.
Is this Brixen?
Hey, how you doing, Wendy?
Good. How are you?
Hey, you're good. I got a comment on this. You guys and anybody who believes this are absolute fools to think that they are real, that their feelings are hurt about this. These are the top echelon of maledom, and all they do is rip on each other in behind closed doors. And Trump had a Comedy Central roast about him.
Right, I know.
And was very good-natured about it. So what you're seeing is kind of like when you go into a job interview and they say, give us a weakness, and you say, oh, I'm very impatient. Well, that's not necessarily a weakness, but you can talk about it. So I think that's basically what these guys are doing, and you can't really fall into the trap of saying, oh, my feelings are hurt.
But Brixen, the Trump that you saw roasted on Comedy Central was the host of The Apprentice, who wanted more people to watch The Apprentice. The Donald Trump that's upset the way he's being portrayed now is the president of the United States.
That sounds so weird when you say that.
I know it does.
What are you saying? He's switching personalities? That he's suddenly more sensitive now?
Yes.
The guy with
absolutely.
The
he is.
Weapon,
Do you think he would submit to a Comedy Central roast today? I don't think he would.
Of course not. Well, no one would. No one would in that level. Of course you would not.
But
at that level.
See?
But I know he's not going to sit there and say, please stop hurting my feelings.
No, but you just don't say anything then. You just go, oh, SNL, whatever. They do what they want. I don't watch it. That hurts more.
He's getting the reaction he wants. When he says, stop hurting my feelings, everybody says, oh, look what the wussy he is. Then he's getting them to talk about other things that are not germane to the issue. And also, hey, Wendy, I got a quick, when we get closer to Valentine's Day, I have got the greatest Valentine's Day story with you in it. And it concerns the greatest prize ever given over radio, to which I won, thanks to you. So I don't know if I'm going to call in later with that, but it was an excellent story.
All right. We'll talk to you in a week.
Brixen, hang on a minute. Get his number, because I'm dying to know what this is. And I don't know what I had to do.
It's the greatest prize of all time, and you are involved.
I'm nervous.
I would be very nervous. I'm not even in the story, and I'm nervous.
All right. Jan wants to talk. Hi, Jan. How are you?
I told your producer I didn't necessarily want to talk on the radio. I was driving along. I was just laughing my head off because I was thinking the same thing that you're thinking until this last caller. That's like the so-called president and the so-called press secretary cares?
Right.
Cares? I mean, I write letters to the editor. I know there are going to be haters. I don't look at the online stuff because I just say I did it. It happened. And I move on. These are our top officials. I was just driving along, just shaking my head in my car through the fog and going, this can't be the so-called president and the so-called press secretary. Can't be.
I don't remember Ronald Reagan ever commenting on Phil Hartman's portrayal of him as president. I don't remember Jimmy Carter ever commenting on Dan Aykroyd's portrayal of him. Dana Carvey did an incredible George Bush Sr. There was
I'm
nothing.
Sure they just like
Will
people
Ferrell.
Talking about them and,
right.
you know, featuring them.
Right.
Maybe this last caller is right, that they just want us to birdwalk in a different direction so that they can lambast us or something else.
Maybe.
So maybe it's just, you know, it's like the Patriots on Sunday, diversionary tactics, and then they throw the ball down the field. I don't know. Maybe.
I love that analogy. That was fantastic.
All right, make sure your headlights are on, okay, Jan?
They are.
All right,
thank
good.
You so much.
Thanks,
thank
Jan.
You. She's a conspiracist.
No, there's something to that. There's definitely something to that.
And real quick, we were trying to think of women that portrayed men, and we also were thinking about, you had mentioned that cast members being called back to play certain roles. Richard, you wanted to touch on that? Richard?
No.
Check 1, 2.
Who was he going to say? Do you know?
Tina Fey did Sarah Palin.
But Tina Fey was part of the cast when she started doing Sarah Palin.
So that's why they brought her back.
Wasn't she, or was she already gone?
I think she was still there.
I think
and
she
John
was
Goodman comes back every once in a while.
Yeah, he played, but not like this. Like normally, if you're SNL and you're casting either the president or you're casting the press secretary, you go, "That's going to be a running character. We got to have somebody part of the staff doing it." But not in either case this time.
And again, if I was Kristen Stewart, I would be so bummed that Melissa McCarthy came out for a guest shot.
She got all the attention.
Totally.
Yeah. Yep. All right, a break, some news, more show. Thanks, everybody, by the way, for calling in and texting in. We've got more coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Kim. It's the first Tuesday of the month, and you know what happens the first Tuesday of every month, Bill.
Mike McNamara, and this is a decree. It's by law, we invite Mike to come in and tell us what's going on at the Midwest Independent Film Festival.
Okay.
It's now a law, Mike.
Thank
so
you.
You've become part of the legislature.
My petition worked.
Yep. Yep. You never disappoint us. There's always good things going on with the Midwest Independent Film Festival, and certainly this month is no exception.
Oh, we're super excited. This is really our opening night. So since with the beginning of January, we take off the first Tuesday in January. So we get to tell people Happy New Year, even though it's already February. So it's very exciting.
But you haven't seen people since the New Year changed.
So Happy New Year, Bill.
Happy New Year,
Wendy.
Thank you, Mike.
Tonight, opening night for the Film Festival, Landmark Century Center Cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And we're opening with this amazing drama, all-star cast. It's called Halfway. It all shot in Wisconsin. It's been winning festival awards and laurels all over the country. And now it's coming back to the Midwest to make its Chicago premiere. Wonderful cast. And I brought with one of the amazing stars of the film from Caroline in the City, from The Office, also that new CW show, No Tomorrow. This is Amy Peetz.
Amy, how are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm so glad to be back in Chicago.
Amy and I go
really,
way
it's
back.
It's raining and crappy today.
I love it.
This is how it should be. This is Chicago at its
Give
best.
Give me more.
You and I have known each other for a long, long time. I was with you right after you got your first network job, an episode of Star Trek.
Yes.
Star Trek the Next Generation.
Yes.
Right. Oh, yeah. When I was Googling for photos of you online, I saw you in a very short haircut.
Yeah, Pat Benatar looking.
It was.
Yes. That was me.
That was a planet where all the aliens looked like Pat Benatar. Do you remember that episode?
Their heartache
lowest,
to heartache.
Lowest rated episode of Star Trek the Next Generation.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
But what a thrill that must have been to be on a show. I mean, you've been on dozens of shows like that, but that first time to be in Star Trek
the
Next
Generation.
Oh, my
God. And I was a fan.
Yeah.
I would hang out with my friend Bill Laren at Act One Bookstore, and we would talk about Star Trek and Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
If I can say
number one French to the bridge,
Jean-Luc Picard. And then I got to meet him, and
he was awesome, wasn't he?
Oh, he was awesome. And you know, the outfits were the most fun because they kind of built the utopian vision of a physicality underneath their uniforms. So you'd unzip, and there'd just be like an older dude with like sort of slumped shoulders and little calves and like a flat butt. And then he'd zip back up, and he was like Superman. And they gave me size D's.
Oh,
it was great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
The future's a great place.
The future's a great place.
I can't wait. I'll go shop there.
Yeah.
All right. Talk about your involvement with Halfway. How did this come to be?
I auditioned like every other actress in Los Angeles for our director, Ben Caird, our producer, Johnny Patterson. And Ben's father is a, you know, hoity-toity big shot director over in England.
What would we know him from?
He's pedigree. Shows like Nicholas Nickleby he conceived and directed for the West End and Broadway.
Yeah.
So I knew we were dealing with a guy who grew up knowing how to tell stories and being taught by the best. So I was very intrigued. But what also intrigued me was the script and the subject matter. Taking place on a farm in Wisconsin, I was very excited to tell the stories of my people. My tribe.
You're from Wisconsin.
I am from Wisconsin. My dad was a dairy farmer. It took place on a dairy farm. I felt very plugged in immediately.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so
it all takes place. I mean, a lot of it takes place on a dairy farm. It revolves around. You all saw The Blind Side that Sandra Bullock won the Oscar for. Well, her co-star in it, the big linebacker lineman guy, Quentin Aaron. He is the star and executive producer of this film, and basically, he's coming out of jail. And his white stepbrother is a lawyer and got him out of jail, but under the condition that kind of his halfway home would be his family's dairy farm in Montfort, Wisconsin. Enter Amy Peetz.
Well, yeah, there's been some deaths in the family of his mother and my husband in the same car wreck. And there is sort of a thriller underneath all of this, a crime drama. So there's a lot going on. It's deeply emotional. It touches upon the question of recidivism and how to get people back on their feet after they get out of jail. So these were all topics I wanted to delve into. You don't get to do that on sitcoms, so this was really fun. It was cool.
I think the word, Mike, I think you said gritty.
It's gritty.
And what's wrong with that?
I love gritty. And I mean, this is so beautifully shot. And you really, it's a truly a Midwest film. It's what the Midwest Independent Film Festival is here for. And what's cool is we had filmmakers from like Ben Caird, who's from England. The producer, Johnny Patterson's from Scotland. The DP was from LA. A lot of the producers were Chicago, Wisconsin. So we're bringing together New York, LA, United Kingdom, Scotland, Midwest, Chicago, all coming together in this film. And it's just, really powerful. All-star cast also includes Jillian Zinsser, also includes Jeffrey DeMunn, who is amazing from The Walking Dead. Won an Emmy nominee. Jeffrey is
a bunch of Stephen King stuff over the years too. He's a great actor.
I mean, really, they did a great job of putting just a cast to get every role is just perfectly cast and just really beautifully done.
All right, the Midwest Independent Film Festival. How long have you been doing this? Because without you, how do these movies get shown? Seriously.
Well, when we started it, there was no Netflix, there was no YouTube, there was no nothing. There was really nowhere else for these films to be shown. And this is really going to be your only chance to see Halfway in the theater. And the release date, they're still looking for distribution, so that hasn't been set yet. So this is your only chance to see this film on the big screen, in the theater. We're going to have a packed house tonight. I'll give away a few tickets at the end of the segment.
Good.
But this is our lucky 13th year.
Look at that.
For First Tuesdays with the Midwest Independent Film Festival.
And what was your crowd like at your first one? Seriously, because now...
I mean, people thought we were crazy. Me and the gentleman I co-founded it with, Michael Quilford, who's a really good cinematographer, we were like, we're only going to show films made in the Midwest. Well, this was in 2004, so people were like, that's like no films. Yeah. And we said, well, we're going to figure it out. And then we kind of looked at each other and we're like, is this going to work or not? And, you know, at that point, there was, I mean, we're dating ourselves here, but there was no online ticketing.
Right.
There was no Facebook.
Right.
I mean, you pretty much were just like, yep. My mom would call people. I had people that would, you know, we had a list.
That was his PR director.
My mom, we would email folks and we'd all be like, well, I kind of heard some people are coming out tonight. And, you know, every time you were just kind of hoping people showed up.
Yeah.
And, you know, month by month, more and more people showed up. We found more and more films. And here we are 13 years later.
Also 13 years later, from a filmmaker standpoint, they now have the ability to make and edit these films in their kitchen if they want to. They can do it on a home computer, and it looks like it's professional quality. It is professional quality.
It is professional. Well, what's so great is just the doors are open now, and anybody can make films, and they can do it much more quickly. It used to be if you were making a film, you were shooting it on Super 16, or you were shooting it on a camcorder, and it was going to look terrible,
right.
You know? And you had nowhere to – and you could only have DVDs. Now anybody can make a film. Like you said, they can make it look great. They can edit it on their laptop, And there's immediate platforms for it.
Well, and tonight there's a great panel discussion to cover just that topic before we show Halfway. What time is that, Mike? 6?
Yeah, so the doors open at 6. The panel's in the theater at 6:30. And it's actually going to be all about bringing great cast to your films.
Oh, good. How do you get
an
your...
Amy Peets? I mean, yes, how do yeah. you?
Great cast and Amy Peets, which may not be one in the same.
No, but I was thinking that, too, because when you're saying people were shooting these things, no budget, and now, you know, this is something that you can say, I want to be part of this.
Yeah, and there are a few things that, you know, really attracted me to this project that will be revealed in tonight's panel.
Oh, good.
Awesome.
Along with, who might
So we're also going to have
tonight.
David O'Connor, one of the top casting directors in the city and in the country. He's going to be on there talking about his relationships with the name talent, so to speak, like mm-hmm. Amy. And Reed Brody, who's the producer of Who Gets the Dog, that Alicia Silverstone romantic comedy.
Oh, right,
he came
right.
Back in September.
Yeah.
So he's going to talk about how he's kind of dealing with those agents and what have you. And then the moderator is going to be Mike Schmiedler, who has produced TV shows for Travel Channel, CNN, NBC. So they're all going to be talking about their different perspectives on just bringing great talent to your films. Mm-hmm. And because I think a lot of people think, well, how do I – if I wanted Amy in my film, how do I even, I mean, what am I,
my relatives are constantly like, will you read my script in that? So, come to the panel, we'll tell you a little bit of how to get that done, how to realize your dream as a Midwestern filmmaker.
And this is done prior to showing the film.
So that's at 6:30, and then right after that, reload your beverages, and we're going to see the Chicago premiere of Halfway at 7:30. That'll be followed by a Q&A with cast and crew and Amy.
I can't tell you how valuable that is to people who just not only want to be in film but enjoy films. Those Q&As, because I've sat in on those.
Sure.
They're so helpful if you're just a film goer to understand the process of what goes on behind the scenes.
I go all the time in Los Angeles. The Screen Actors Guild will hold screenings around awards show times. And for all these years I've been doing this, 30-plus years, I'm still fascinated by hearing the process of how other far more famous actors approach their projects and their roles and how they get things done.
Pretty cool. We have to take a quick break, and then we will continue with Amy Peets and Mike McNamara from the Midwest Independent Film Festival. Tonight they will be showing
Halfway.
That's it. Halfway.
Mike McNamara is here from the Midwest Independent Film Festival. The film Halfway premieres tonight. Go see it. Amy Peets, one of the stars of that movie, is in studio with us. Amy, I also wanted to mention, you're in what I consider to be one of the funniest episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm ever. Can you just
Wendy Wheelchair?
Wheelchair. Yeah. Really a funny episode. If people haven't seen it, what are they missing?
Wow. They're missing total inappropriate dialogue and behavior.
Start to finish.
Yeah. There is, can I say cunnilingus on the air?
I don't know.
It's all right. It's all right.
When you start a sentence with, can I say?
A lot of pressure from that point on.
Yeah. Right. They perk up.
Yeah. There's a lot of fun stuff in that episode.
Yes.
It is really good.
Yeah. But really, like every episode of the show, it starts out awkward and it just gets more and more awkward as that episode goes on. And I've seen it a few times. You're funny in it. The whole thing is just perfect. So funny.
Yeah. I can't wait to see that CNN comedy special that's coming up because they had Larry David doing a little quip about it.
About the history of comedy.
Yeah. It looks really good. And so does Halfway. Really, it's amazing what you can do with these low budget. Is it low budget? I guess it is.
It's got about a six-figure budget, and they don't usually like to talk about the budget too much. But it's a relatively low budget, but it's one of those where it's enough to bring in great actors like Amy, like Jeffrey DeMunn from The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
But that's what the panel's going to be about tonight, just before Halfway, is like, how can you really make the most out of your budget? How can you really attract, you know, great actors and get your script in front of them and try to get them, you know, the absolute best person that you can for every role. And tonight, if you guys are cool with it, we'll do a little quick giveaway for for your listeners. We'll say the first five people who are new to the fest that go to our Facebook page for the Midwest Independent Film Festival and just message me, message the fest. I'll be checking it out within the hour. And just mention Bill and Wendy, and we'll have complimentary tickets for you and a guest to come out tonight, Landmark Century Center Cinema, 6 p.m., limited tickets remaining, and it's really going to be an awesome night.
When you say complimentary, do you mean free, or do you mean they'll say nice things about you?
Right. We'll say nice things to you for paying. No, right, just kidding. Fair. It's free tickets for you and a guest. We want to always bring out new people to the fest, so we appreciate it. And even if you can't make it tonight, go to our Facebook page, go to our brand new YouTube page. We got a lot of great films up there, and subscribe and like them.
Yeah.
Amy Peets, it's a pleasure to meet you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Don't you miss? I know you lived here for a bunch of years. Don't yeah. you? Do you have to miss the city at
Terribly.
Times? Doesn't it eat you up sometimes?
It does. I mean, driving in off of the freeway, I was like, I barely reckon. Everything's so pretty now.
Yeah.
Everything's so nice.
Yeah.
There's. It's just a gorgeous place. I would love to live here. Part of the time.
Yeah.
Bounce back in the summertime.
There we go.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys tonight, 6 p.m. at Landmark, and thanks so much for having us on.
Thank you.
You're very, very welcome. Again, that's the Independent Film Festival. Mike, one more time. It's MidwestFilm.com.
Yeah, MidwestFilm.com. We actually have a brand new site. Go check it out. Limited tickets remaining at MidwestFilm.com. Full schedule's up there. Doors are at 6, panel at 6:30, and then the Chicago premiere of Halfway at 7:30.
Perfect. Good luck tonight, Amy. Great to see you
Thanks.
Again.
Great to see you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill. It's for Wendy.
Hi.
Just between you and me, this isn't for anybody else. This is just for me to ask you, and you can tell me if you want to. Did you steal Tom Brady's jersey? Did you take Tom Brady's jersey yesterday or over the weekend?
I bet Putin took it.
I wouldn't be shocked if...
To give it to Donald Trump.
Putin took it. Because
there's
already rumors that he has stolen a Super Bowl ring, Vladimir Putin. You know that, right?
No.
No, there is. I'm not making that up.
How would he get his hands on it?
He's Vladimir Putin.
He doesn't wear a shirt. He can't put it in a shirt pocket.
Right. That's the downside of always not wearing a shirt. You can't hide things like Super Bowl rings in your pocket. Yeah, there's a rumor that he has stolen a Super Bowl ring. I don't think he's behind the Tom Brady jersey. But good luck trying to sell that.
Tom's a big fan of the president, though.
Right, that's
fan.
What I'm saying. Yeah. Vladimir took it and gave it to Donald Trump. Or maybe Trump took it and gave it to Vladimir.
Maybe.
We're on first names.
But he, you know, that meant a lot to Tom Brady, but certainly in the sports collectible market, that would fetch top dollar. But how, you couldn't even fence that. How would you turn around and sell that? You couldn't.
Well, I heard some audio of him somewhere saying, yeah, I don't know what happened to it, but I know that if somebody finds it on eBay or something, let me know because I'll just buy it back.
Well,
he didn't even seem to care.
Yeah, isn't that, that's curious, isn't it? I wonder what that jersey would go for, except honestly, if you try to sell it, they nab you. There's no way around it. You
I
can't
bet
even
there
do
are
it.
A lot of people that are selling a Tom Brady jersey that claim that was the one he wore, so how do you filter through the 300 people?
I don't know.
Who took it? Wasn't it in his bag right there when he was on the podium?
He said it was in the bag, yeah, and then he looked in the bag and it was no longer in
the bag. Did he check his kids? Kids steal things.
I don't think it'd be... No, because even then, you're keeping it in the family. That's all right. A bunch of years ago, there was a guy I knew who had a sports collectible store. And he was talking about how the other sports collectible stores all sold things that were autographed by players, and they sold them for top dollar, except that it wasn't actually players signing these things. They would get a guy
Their
who
assistant.
Could mimic...
Yeah.
Yeah. They could just fake the autographs, and they would turn around and sell something that you signed or I signed and pretended that it was, you know, Walter Payton or Michael Jordan.
I learned that on Pawn Stars.
Did they talk about that?
Yeah, because they bring in an expert. Like, somebody will bring something into the shop and say, I've got Hank Aaron's autograph.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll get an expert who, that's what he does, is mm-hmm. figure out autographs. And I don't remember if it was Hank Aaron, but it was some notable sports figure. And they said, well, here's the deal. The athlete himself didn't sign it. His assistant did, and his assistant was the one who always signed the balls. So while he kept the same assistant, they all looked the same.
That's awful.
I know.
If you bought something that you thought was signed by your favorite sports star...
Bill Leff.
Thank you.
And no one can recreate your
Nobody
signature,
can. I can't
way.
Even recreate my own signature.
I know. It's different every time.
It's always different. Same eight letters, always
right.
in a different order.
You get bored easily.
A lot of
easily.
L's, a lot of F's, just throw them down, whatever you find. But, all right, let's say you love Paul Konerko. Oh, I love Paul Konerko. And you save your money and you buy a Paul Konerko jersey. But Paul didn't sign it.
Dolores, his assistant, signed it. I don't think it's as good.
It sure isn't.
That's so upsetting.
But I'm sure there are a lot of real celebrities and sports figures that don't allow that to happen. I think back years ago, mm-hmm. it happened more frequently.
Maybe because you didn't have access to the internet.
Right.
So if you saw something and you go, wow, Jim Hickman signed this, now you can go to the internet and Google his signature and see if it's even close.
Or his assistant's signature.
Yeah, right.
Let's see if it's closer.
Right, right. Actually, I think Jim Hickman's assistant signature is worth more than Jim Hickman's right now. It's
I don't
a weird
know who
twist.
Jim Hickman is.
He played for the Cubs for a while in the late 60s, early 70s.
All right, good to know. I'm going to file that away.
But it's so, I mean, how dishonest is that? And I mean, I've been to collectible shows where that's all guys do is they sell stuff that's been autographed by hopefully the stars. I wouldn't spend any kind of money on that.
What have you learned, and now it's even worse, you trust no one.
You can't.
I really
don't.
That's
too bad. That's just too bad.
Even like tickets on Craigslist, I know people have done it.
Mm-hmm.
I would never do it. I mean, I can get a ticket for a Blackhawks game,
right.
And I can go to my colored printer at home
yeah.
and print it and sell it to somebody.
Right.
And get there first.
Right.
And then they come and they show their ticket that's
yeah.
printed out. It looks legitimate because it is legitimate, but I've already used it.
Yeah. Hard to trust anything.
I don't trust anyone.
Huh.
I certainly don't trust you.
No, I'd be at the top of that list. I would absolutely be on the top of the list. Have I asked you this before? When I go to Blackhawks games, there's always guys selling parking passes
I don't
so
trust
that you can
that.
Park. But I wouldn't, again, that's something I wouldn't invest in because what if then you got to the lot where it said you have a parking pass and they don't let you in? Then you're out $25.
But I don't understand why they're allowed to walk around and sell those because there are police officers walking and driving around. So how come they let them do it?
Right.
And why do they have an extra parking ticket? What, they've walked to the game
right.
so they don't need it? I don't really
right.
understand that.
It's all very suspect. Who did Jim Hickman play for, quick?
The Cubs.
Yep, good.
What position?
Outfield.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Oh, fine. I've dabbled in the sports business for quite a while, and it's tough because you got to have a certificate of authenticity, but that's not even 100% because it could be the agent or anybody that signed it, got the certificate, and then went to sell it.
So when you see something, let's say it's a bat and it has a baseball player's signature on it and there is that certificate, what exactly are they saying? What is that proving exactly? That it's guaranteed they saw?
Yeah, I don't think it's for a collector that wants to resell it. I think it's for somebody who wants to hang stuff in their basement.
Oh, maybe. But even then, you're going, okay, so I'm trusting somebody who signed that certificate, but where's their trustworthiness? You don't know who they are, do you? You wouldn't.
No, but Mickey Mantle had a guy that would sign 24 balls for him before each game when he was playing.
And it wasn't Mickey Mantle, it was just a guy.
No, yeah.
But think about 24 before each game, how many games, all the Mickey Mantle autograph balls that are out there, people are comparing it to the authentic
right.
one that was pre-signed by someone else.
Right.
And
right.
those are the ones that were floating around in the late 50s, early 60s, and that's what people go by.
That's crazy. That's insane. Does it kind of water down what you do a little bit, Steve? Don't you feel like, uh-oh, this...
Oh, no, with the advent of the internet, I gave up probably about 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't blame you.
I can't trust anything.
That's terrible. Well, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you, Steve. Another tale of woe, Bill, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
414 says, I went to a ball game where someone walked me into a space. I thought, awesome, I'm so close to the stadium. When I got back, it was not really a parking space, and I had a $50 ticket.
Oh, no.
You are so lucky you weren't towed.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I was trying to think of how to tell this on the air, and I think I can do this. You and I both know somebody who has a family member in the sports business to some extent. I can't go much deeper than that. I can't.
I love your
they
little
They had
puzzles,
a shop
by the way.
Where they sold a Chicago team sports memorabilia. And I was looking and seriously investing in something that I saw that had a signature of one of my favorite players.
Who
and
is
this
it?
This person, I can't say
you
that
You can't
part
say
of
your
it.
Favorite player?
I cannot.
Boy, this is a great story. This is the undetailed story of
this
Bill Left's life.
This will be the most vague story I will ever tell on the radio. I can't tell you the person that we know. I can't tell you the team, and I cannot tell you the player. All I can tell you is
an item.
Central time zone. That's all. That's the only information I can disclose at this
baseball,
point.
Baseball, football, hockey puck. Can you say any of that? Of course not. All right, continue.
If I was in a court of law and they forced me, I would say basketball.
I know who you're talking about. Right. So see, you shouldn't have said that.
If I was in a court of law, I'd say that. And then I'd be charged with perjury. Treason and perjury.
Yes.
All right. So let's say it was basketball. And let's say there was an item there that was signed by my favorite player. And I was looking at it and thinking to myself, I don't usually spend money on sports collectibles. But if I was going to, I would get this. He signed it. Right.
You're not even a basketball lover either. This is a really intriguing story.
And then our mutual friend said, you're not thinking about buying that, are you? And I go, yeah, look, he goes, he didn't sign that. And I go, what do you mean he didn't sign it? He goes, we get a guy who can duplicate the autograph. That's who signs it. Isn't that terrible?
So did you buy it?
Yeah. I got a dollar off because I knew he didn't really sign it. But isn't that awful?
Yes, it
how
is.
Many? All right, I was only there for 5 minutes. So how many times a year did they sell that item, a version of that item, to somebody who went home thinking, my favorite player signed this and I can display it prominently in a case? No, just some guy who was close. They signed it.
See, that's not fair. And when we have celebrities in the studio, a lot of times my kids are fans, yeah. And I ask for an autograph for them.
Like Steve Dale.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Well, Tiki's the one who wants Steve Dale's autograph.
Right.
But I feel funny sometimes asking them because I wonder if they're thinking, oh, they're just going to go online and sell it. But then that's when I thought if you put two and if it's personalized... Oh. Then it's fine.
Sell it then.
Well, you can if you know that happens to be your name.
right. True. That's very true.
But I feel funny asking them because it's like it's a weird world
now. I know. All right. How about this? A quick break, and then a whole lot more to talk about on today's show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right. So we're telling the story a little bit about Tom Brady's jersey, trying to figure out how if somebody did steal it. I guess if you're enterprising enough to steal it. There's the chance you'd want to keep it for yourself because that's quite a prize to have the jersey that the quarterback wore in the biggest comeback game in Super Bowl history.
I bet Matt Ryan stole it.
Matt Ryan may have stolen it.
He's trying to get the superpower out of it.
Exactly. I'm going to sleep in it. I'm going to wear it all the time. Just with it, the jersey and my underpants. All the time.
All right, there's a chance that that's what happened. The point we're trying to make is that in the sports category, it's very hard to sell things, especially autograph things that may or may not have been autographed by your favorite sports stars, and also hard to sell tickets. There's a bunch of texts that came in. Here's a text from 616. Our neighbor was the best man at his friend's wedding. We live in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're Tigers fans. As the best man, he arranged a bachelor party to be at the Tigers game. One of the guys couldn't attend, so our neighbor tried selling the ticket outside the stadium for just $10 so that the ticket wouldn't go to waste. But unfortunately, he sold it to an undercover cop who then arrested him for scalping, even though the ticket was originally a $70 ticket, and he was selling it for $10. We had to drive to Detroit for court 3 different times and then pay a huge fine, but somehow avoided jail time. It was all ridiculous. So that's a guy just trying. He's not trying to make a profit, obviously. He knew he was going to take a loss. He didn't want the ticket to go to waste. That's awful.
That is very awful. And now the Tom Brady Super Bowl jersey that went missing, they've called in the Texas Rangers.
Oh, one of the best teams in the American League.
No, it's Houston Police Department.
What about Walker, Texas Ranger? This is the kind of thing he'd be good at.
Isn't Chuck Norris involved in this?
He always is, yes.
Wasn't that, well, they had the Lone Ranger.
Right.
The most famous of them all.
He could be in on this.
His horse, Trigger?
Aren't there, and his trusted sidekick, Tonto, Steve, aren't there always cameras somewhere nearby?
Well, where was the bag? I know that's an obvious question, Wendy.
No, they're being very vague about that. Because you go, well, if it's in the locker room, maybe there's not cameras in the locker room. That'd be kind of creepy. But there must be some documented film evidence somewhere of people coming in and out of a room. Wouldn't there be?
You'd think.
It's a high-profile place. The Texas Stadium is a big place. They'd have to have cameras somewhere.
Somebody is on camera taking it. Again, did he just check with his kids?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, not thinking, I don't care if they have them. I don't mean that. But just, you know, maybe they stashed them somewhere.
Right.
Maybe they took it out of his dad's bag and put it in somebody else's bag.
Maybe.
Edelman had a great game. Maybe he gave it to him.
Maybe.
You should be helping the Texas Rangers instead of just telling me this stuff. You should be on the case.
He's so good, they don't give out the game ball. They give out the game Brady jersey.
Edelman made some pretty fantastic catches. I forgot to talk about that during the Super Bowl, because that one catch that he was able to leave the ball in the air and grab one of the Falcons' feet.
Amazing.
I really.
Amazing. And there's a guy, Amendola, who just was flawless. There were so many things that happened in the last 20 minutes of the game. And if any one of them didn't happen, you have a different outcome.
Absolutely. How come we can't just get one player that can do an amazing thing on our team? One player.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Just one, so we could focus all our energy on that one person.
Yeah.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill. How are you today?
Really good.
I think what you guys are missing is the statute of limitations. I mean, if you remember last year, they were talking about, I don't know, I think it was Beverly Bannett or something, robbed a bank. They said, if we don't find this guy in, like, 20 days, it's over.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm thinking this guy's just sitting on his jersey waiting for the 5 to 7 years, and then if he can actually prove that's the jersey, he can do whatever he wants to.
Oh, I never thought of that. That's a good idea.
You know what I mean?
Did you steal it, Tony? These are great ideas.
No. I'd like to steal the life's of or paybacks of Wendy, though.
This is more valuable than the Tom Brady jersey.
Those shirts are. Do you want one? I think we can pull that off. All right, Tony, stay on the line.
Okay, thanks.
All right, you have started a whole flood of things just by being mean to me, and I'm okay with it.
Thank you.
Because I will suffer for comedy.
Thank you.
Yes, payback is a Wendy. Something that was. I want to give Bertrand credit.
He was as in on it as anybody.
Yes, that's how I remember it.
You guys have different
but
stories.
But everybody in the room...
I only heard Bertrand.
I can't be responsible for what you were thinking, Bill. All I know is what I said.
The phrase, the classic phrase, and this was during a Crosstalk with Steve Cochran show, payback is a...
B-word.
Is a B-word, a female dog, word we can't say. But when we said it during the Crosstalk, it just... You know what they say? Payback is a... And everybody in the studio... From Steve Bertrand to Steve Cochran to Dave Ennett to myself to people
all right,
walking
A, Dave
past,
Ennett did not say a word.
On Michigan Avenue.
I only heard Bertrand say it. It was hanging
Steve
out there for
the
a little bit. All right, well, that's what
I
said.
I don't usually fight this fight, but I think we need to find the tape. Kevin doesn't do anything else after the show, does he?
No.
Oh, my God, he's bringing you down and Kevin. For once, he's nice to me. What's wrong here?
I know for a fact Steve said it the fastest and the loudest. So I give you credit for that, Steve. But then I said, this needs to be a T-shirt. This just can't be an idea. This needs to be a shirt.
And thanks for making that happen with you and
Mark Doyle from Rags of Honor, and David Hochberg is also involved.
Whose Pearl Mortgage is bigger than my saying here.
Yeah.
Yeah, but those are these T-shirts. I'm kidding about that.
No,
I'm not. He paid for it.
Yeah, that's what you get when you pay for it, right?
Yeah,
right.
I know. Yeah, I sure as hell wasn't going to pay for it. And I love it's Bill's idea. Well, do you want to pay for it? Hell no.
Well, corporate sponsors were all over this. We had to turn down dozens and dozens of other sponsors because there wasn't room after David put his Pearl Mortgage on the back.
Yeah, it would have been a good idea to put WGN on the shirt, but, you know, good thing we didn't put our hours because they're changing.
Right.
So.
Right. All right, so we're giving one away. Tony has one coming his way. You don't have to steal it, Tony. It's not in Tom Brady's bag. It's in your mailbox.
It's worth more than Brady's jersey.
Way more, way more. All right, a break, some news, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. From time to time, I will come across a story, usually online, sometimes in the news, maybe the newspaper or on television, and I'll say to myself, this is a huge story. Why isn't it getting more coverage? How can a story this big not get gigantic coverage? And I'll give you an example right now. About a week ago, maybe I'm more sensitive to this because I love stories about the lost continent of Atlantis. You know, anytime I hear about Atlantis, I get so excited. Well, about a week ago, the findings were reported about what they're calling a lost continent. Now, this takes place in the Indian Ocean, and joining us right now by way of telephone is Lewis Ashwall. Lewis is a professor at the University of Witwatersrand, located in South Africa, and the lead author of the study I'm describing, Lost Continent. Lewis, thank you very much for being here.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for helping to popularize science, which we think is important.
All right, be honest with me. As this story was developing, and then it was reported, like I said, about a week ago, weren't you yourself a little shocked? I mean, this is big news, what you guys found. Why wasn't this getting more coverage?
I think it's getting enormous coverage. I'm astonished at the number of requests for interviews from the media. You know, I've been talking nonstop, TV, radio, newspapers, everything, for the past 3-4 days.
Good. So,
sorry, Bill, you wanted to be the one to break
I thought
this.
It was just me. I guess other people figured it out, too. All right, let's describe what was found there in the Indian Ocean, Lewis. Tell us exactly what went on.
I will. It's unfortunate that the term lost continent is being used, because that brings to mind Atlantis, as you say, and that's a matter of mythology. We're talking about something that we think is real. And the story is that in the Indian Ocean island of Mauritius, it's a volcano. It's not unlike Hawaii. And the lavas that made this volcano started only about 9 million years ago, which is pretty young, and it continued a little bit almost till today. So what we found in the volcanic rocks, these young volcanic rocks in Mauritius, was we were able to recover small amounts of the mineral zircon, which is special because it can be used, if you analyze it properly, you can determine age information, tells you when it formed. So what we found was that some of these zircons have enormous ages, and that is really unexpected and surprising. So in a 9-million-year-old rock, there are zircons that are 3,000 million years old. That's 3 billion. So that is a surprise, and it's important because the only place in the Earth where you find stuff that old, rocks of that age, is in continents. And there's many examples of this. In fact, I'm sitting on one at the moment here in Johannesburg. Plenty of rocks of that age, but we're on a continent. Mm-hmm. You never find this stuff in the oceans. The oldest things you find in the oceans are about 200 million. So this is much older, and we suggest that there's a piece of continent under this volcano. And the story is that, our explanation is that as the magmas were rising toward the surface, they went through this piece of ancient continent, picked up these grains of zircon, and delivered it to the surface where we can collect it now and study it. So that's what we've done.
So it's underwater, this particular continent, correct?
Well, water isn't really involved. It's under the rock that constitutes the volcano.
Okay, so the lava flowed, and this is underneath that.
Yeah, so this piece of continent was happened to be, by chance, at a place where a new volcano wanted to form. And the new volcano blanketed this piece of continent with lavas and buried it. We don't exactly know how deep, but probably several kilometers. And there's no water in between the volcano and the buried continent. They're all attached to each other, probably.
Lewis, when you say the word continent, does this lead us to believe civilization of some sort? What exactly does continent mean in this context?
It doesn't. The word continent has been difficult for us because people will think, oh, well, I know the continents. There are 7 of them, and you can name them. Mm-hmm. And that's a geographical way of thinking of it. As a geologist, the word continent means something different, and it means something that stands above the water, probably, because it's made out of light rock, not very dense, mostly granite, that kind of thing. And it has enormous variability in age. But the sizes of continents isn't really relevant here. There can be big ones, little ones, tiny ones, all different shapes and sizes. So if you want to say there are 7 continents, you know, people in Greenland are going to be mad at you. That's
sure.
A big piece of continent that isn't counted. You know, and there's other ones. Madagascar, also a pretty big thing. And there's smaller ones and littler ones. So, and they're all over the place. So we have to, to think of it in a geological way, maybe. And another interesting point about that is that in many places in the Earth, you could say that they sit together, and they must have separated. And a good example is North and South America. You can look at a globe or a map. You can see that it was once connected to Africa, mm-hmm. because the shapes of the coastlines are similar.
The puzzle pieces.
So you might want us, like puzzle pieces. And so the place that we're studying in the Indian Ocean, so all of the continents in the southern hemisphere, so that includes South America, Africa, Madagascar, India, Australia, Antarctica, all of these things were joined together once, let's say about 500 million years ago. And that is what we call a supercontinent. that started to break apart only about 200 million years ago to the positions of those pieces that we recognize today. That process is still going on. So what we have found is a new piece of this puzzle. And when you try to reconstruct the continents, you have to take this new piece of thing that we found into account. So it allows us to refine and do a much better job at reconstructing, and also to understand better how continents break apart. And the answer is it's very messy. It's not a simple, clean break. They stretch, they break up into various sized pieces. And we think, in fact, that in the Indian Ocean, there may be many other fragments of continents littered throughout the Indian Ocean. And we have yet to recognize and prove that. So,
is the search on for those? Are you currently looking for those pieces?
Actually, we're not, because most of the pieces we suggest are either submerged, so they're underwater, it's hard to get to them, or they're covered with coral reefs or sand or stuff like that. So it's not so easy for us to get the samples that we need to prove that there's pieces of continent under there. But maybe if we can drill it or dredge it or do something. But, you know, these kind of activities cost a lot of money, which we as academics don't have access to so easily.
That's kind of great news that you found this zircon crystals and shows that this is over 3 billion years old. But then, like you said, there's no money. What's the next step? What do you study next about this lost land?
Well, there may be other places in the Earth, not necessarily in the Indian Ocean, but maybe in the Atlantic or the Pacific. And I can think of several possibilities that we might go to that would be favorable for looking for this kind of thing. So a couple of examples would be in the Atlantic, near the west coast of Africa, there's the Canary Islands, also young volcano. Near the continent of Africa, could there be a piece of African continent under there? We don't know, but we can try to do the same kind of experiments that we've done in Mauritius. Another example would be the Cape Verde Islands, not too far away from the Canaries. And another example still in the Pacific would be the Galapagos Islands. So, you know, these are things that we can try to explore, and maybe we find out that similar things are happening elsewhere on the planet, and I wouldn't be very surprised.
Lewis, it must be very exciting for you, a man of science, to be looking at something that was formed 3 billion years ago. Did you ever think you'd be in contact with something that old?
Well, I'm actually, my house is built on rock that old.
Is it really, yeah?
Rocks in southern Africa are very old. And so in Johannesburg, where I live, this is where big gold mines are present, and you know, a lot of mining and gold and all kind of things like that. Those rocks are 3 billion. They're 3 billion years old, and there's older ones still nearby to us. And there's also ones in North America. You go to parts of Canada, and you find even old. You find 4 billion year old rocks in the Northwest Territories, for example, in Canada. So there's lots of examples of this, small ones that are preserved on continents, and we know about a lot of them. But when you discover a new one in a really unexpected place, in the middle of the ocean where it shouldn't be, that is really exciting to geoscientists and people who worry about how the Earth is operating and forming, and you know, where are the volcanoes and where are the earthquakes and this kind of stuff. So it contributes to plate tectonic theories and processes that we're improving all the time. So that's the, you know, that's the main highlight of what we've discovered. It contributes to understanding how the Earth works.
Lewis, we love vintage and retro in the United States, but to us that means the 50s. So 3 billion years ago is very impressive to us.
We're almost out of time here, but I want to ask you, when you were in grade school, what made you want to go on and do this geological work? I found a rock one time, and I cracked it open with a hammer in the backyard, and there was a shell inside, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever, but I got into radio. What
you know,
made...
Look, you asked about grade school. I went to grade school in New York City, and I did exactly the same thing in the park. I took a hammer, and I was banging on rocks, and I was amazed at the crystals in there. Did that influence me in when I was studying in universities to study geology? Probably. But really, the thing that hooked me was that somebody told me that they knew somebody else who was a geologist. And this person was paid money to go out in the bush, to go out in the field and do stuff. And I thought that was wonderful. And you know what? It turns out to be absolutely true. I've been going everywhere in the world. People are paying me to do this, and I'm having a great time.
I used to get in trouble for talking a lot in school, and I thought, what job can I do where I can talk a lot? So we both are happy,
off.
Lewis.
It all paid off. Lewis, congratulations on this. This is such exciting news. Lewis Ashwall is his name, professor at the University of Witwatersrand, located in South Africa, lead author of the study that we've been discussing, The Lost Continent. And if people want to know more, Lewis, where should they go?
Oh, they can go anywhere on the internet. Just type in Lost Continent.
There it is.
Or Mauritius Continent, and you'll see millions of websites and articles, and there's even videos of, unfortunately, my university recorded me. And they captured me singing a Taylor Swift song.
Oh,
they were recording it. So it's at the front and the back end of this video, and I'm actually waiting for her call.
That's where I found you on iTunes. I bought some of your music. You're fantastic. Lewis, thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good rest of the week, sir.
You.
All right, that's Lewis Ashwell.
Thank you very much.
We look forward to talking to you again when you find a new continent.
Yes, keep looking. There's many more out there. A break, some news in just a little bit. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Can I tell you something kind of sad? We just had Lewis Ashwall on, professor at the University of Witwatersrand, located in South Africa, talking about the findings of the Lost Continent.
Which he didn't like us to call it the Lost Continent, though. Did you notice that, too?
But
then he called it that?
Right.
I'm a little confused.
Right. And we can't use the word ban either. You know that, right? I think it's because it really does conjure up the image. Like, when you hear Lost Continent, you think of Atlantis. You think there was a primitive people and society going on there. And this wasn't really exactly that. Yeah, Patrick Duffy, the man from Atlantis, was down there. all right. So this is the kind of sad part of this. I don't know if your school did this, but in our science classes in 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, we had science for an entire year. But they would divide it up into the different sciences for a while. Like you'd get
geology,
6 weeks of something and then 8 weeks of something. And for some reason, geology was always just a week of studying rocks. Like other things got 6 weeks or 8 weeks. But for reasons I still don't understand, the geology segment was always 5 days. And that was it.
That's
not enough. That's not enough time.
I like it because of diamonds, of course.
Yeah.
But I really did find that rock. I bet my sister still has it. It was just this big rock that I cracked open, and there was a giant clam
shell
inside.
In the middle of the rock.
I don't know if it was technically a clam, but it was shaped like that.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was the coolest thing. And I did not follow my dreams to become a geologist.
I don't know why you didn't.
I could be mining diamonds right now in South Africa
with
our guest.
I know.
Well, that would have been fun.
Too late. All right. A break and then some news, and then guess what? More show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
On TV, words for books, words of comfort, words of peace, words to make the fighting cease, words to tell you what to do, words are working hard for you, eat your words but don't go hungry, words have always nearly hung me.
Want to talk about words?
Yeah, please.
Were you mesmerized by the Tom Tom Club?
Yeah, the Tom Tom Club scared me. I don't know what it is about them, but they frighten me a little bit.
Love them. All right, so more words have been added to the dictionary. I've heard this. This happens a few times a year.
I think it does.
They're talking about a word that has been added to the Oxford Dictionary, and Merriam-Webster does another little word as well. But let me run some of these past you. Susian.
That's a word, Susian?
Is now in the dictionary.
Can you please spell the word Susian for me?
Like Dr. Seuss with
I-A-N. Meaning that?
Of or relating to.
Oh, that's a word I would use. Because every once in a while you'll see something and you think of the world of Dr. Seuss. So I like that word. All right, I'm in.
I've used Hitchcockian.
As have I.
So I wonder if that's in there.
We got to recommend some words because they have some words that they've recommended. Let me give you some more. The word of 2016, I believe, according to Merriam-Webster, was surreal.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, the word of the year for 2016 is surreal. You say surrealistic, which is also a word, but most people just like to get to the point.
And just go with surreal over surrealistic? Well, it depends on the context, you know. You both are acceptable, I believe.
I've never heard anyone but you say surrealistic.
Surrealistic, but it is a word.
Surrealistic Pillow, I believe, is a Moody Blues record.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
You're a big Moody Blues fan, I know, from way back.
They have influenced my language.
Surreal.
Beyond your wildest dreams.
Yes, pretty much.
Marked
by the intense, irrational reality of a dream. It's a relatively new word in English, only dating back to the 1930s, derived from descriptions of the artistic movement of the early 1900s known as surrealism.
So is it because of, did that word become the word of the year because of the political climate of the country and the fact that unexpected things keep happening, like the Cubs winning the World Series or a team in the Super Bowl coming from 20-some-odd points down? But mostly the political climate. Is that why surreal is such an important word this year?
They don't go into it, but it is a really great question.
I bet it is.
That word's been used forever.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's just when you talk about a dream a lot of times. Oh, so surreal. I was dating Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah.
That wasn't
you had
a dream.
That dream?
No, it was real. There are new words that have been added. Let me tell you some of these. From sports, we get the verb airball. That hasn't been in there before.
Airball's been around since I was a kid.
Yeah.
That's you're shooting baskets, you throw a ball up, it doesn't hit anything,
right.
It doesn't hit the rim or the backboard, you threw an airball.
And another sports word that is a new word, upfake. I don't know what that is.
I'm not positive what upfake is either.
Like when you pretend you're going to shoot a basketball
is that
up
what it is?
And you're faking them? Does anybody know? Or a five hole?
Well, five hole comes from hockey. And that's the area you want to get it through the opening of your goalie to score a goal. That's called the five hole. But it would also be a bar that I would open for hockey players and goalies where they could just sit and relax.
$5 shots.
You do $5 shots, certainly.
Hey, you going out for $5 shots at the five hole tonight?
You could have a side order of biscuits in a basket because that's a hockey term
like
for scoring
it.
A goal. So I'm working with the Melman people. We hope to have that up soon.
Good luck.
Thanks.
From the world of medicine, EpiPen has been added. But see, these are things that have been around forever. I know they've been in news stories because the price of them quadrupled.
Now, is EpiPen, is it a brand name or is that just any pen that...
Epinephrine pen.
Oh, so it's a shortened version of that.
Yeah, I don't think
so. But again, I've heard that for...
Since we were in kindergarten.
Yeah, forever.
There was always that one kid...
Who needed an EpiPen.
Yeah, in case of bee sting.
Right.
That was when it first happened.
Right.
Urgent care. That's been around for a while, too, hasn't it?
It's been around for a while, but maybe it just wasn't somehow accepted as a word or phrase, but why wouldn't it be?
All right, new words from the ever-expanding vocab of the cooking world.
Mm-hmm.
Bertrand, pay attention because I know
Steve
you'll like that.
These.
Arancini. Do you know what that is?
Arancini? Yeah, I don't know.
A-R-A-N-C-I-N-I. Arancini. It's those like rice balls. They're breaded stick, but inside instead of cheese, it's like a rice ball.
Right. That's what arancini is.
I've never had one. What about...
That's not a new concept.
Yes, these are new words.
All right.
I know, I guess it's been around for a while, but that's like
the dictionary refused to accept these until recently?
Yes. Oh. Evu. You know this one, Steve, don't you? E-V-O-O.
Evu 2? Yeah, I know what this is.
Let Bill try and guess, because it'll be fun.
Evu is Steve Lawrence's wife.
No,
that's
Edie. This Edie. Came about simply because of a TV host.
Oh, I didn't know that, but it's capital V. O-O.
No, you can't have two capitals in a row like that.
It'll make so much sense once you know what it is.
All right, so obviously one of the angry chefs on TV started this, right?
Who started it? Tell me that.
I think so, Wendy, unless I'm wrong. I thought it was a Rachel Ray thing.
Yummo! That's not it.
It's not Rachel Ray.
No, it's not the yummo.
Oh.
It's a type
Yummo's
of...
Yummo's one of the Marx Brothers.
No, that's Gummo.
Gummo.
And Zeppo.
Right. I thought it was the sixth Marx Brother.
No. It is. Let's give him a hint. Because this, Kevin, do you know what this is?
Say it again. It's Evo.
EVOO. They're all capital, so it stands for four things.
Are we not men? We are EVO. No. Right? No?
Do you don't know, Kevin? You're a foodie.
Keep in mind, it's two capitals in a row.
Yeah. There's four capitals in a row.
Oh, it's all.
You dip in it. You can dip in it.
Yep. Mainly, you
can dip your food in it.
Usually bread.
I don't know what it is.
You can use it in cooking. Make a salad close. There's a big
butter.
EVOO.
Something, something. Extra virgin olive oil.
Yes, ding.
Oh, so that's a word. But isn't it? But wasn't that just? That, but well, you can't just put the letters of other words together.
They do it now. Was it Rachel Ray that? I don't know because I don't watch her.
I'm looking and there's some dispute. I don't know. I thought that's the first time I saw it when I go home every day and watch a couple of Rachel Rays, you know.
Yeah.
It's everywhere now, Bill.
You extra virgin olive oil.
I look at restaurant menus and they say yes. With EVOO and...
I would need an explanation in a restaurant if I saw that on a menu.
You don't
I have
anymore?
No idea. Well, now I
saved
don't.
You.
Thank you.
Pete, what did I do wrong?
Disappointed with your extensive music background.
What did the music mother do?
Surrealistic Pillow, Jefferson Airplane.
Oh, I said Moody Blues.
Oh, Wendy.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Wendy. Okay.
I stand corrected,
sorry,
Pete. Thank you. I'm sorry to disappoint you.
That was upsetting.
I'm sorry.
No evil for you.
All right, we have more of these. Surreal is the word of 2016. And we all know what surreal means, and that has been added to Merriam-Webster's new dictionary. But I have new words and some that were that might be in the dictionary. These are other new entries. So I have more coming
your way.
All right,
let's do that. That's coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I hit the post totally accidentally.
That was nice.
Thank you.
And we're playing this because this is off the album you're referring to.
Surrealistic Pillow.
That's why.
And I thought it was the Moody Blues. I'm sorry. All right, new words. Merriam-Webster has put together a list of the new words. The word of the year is surreal. And I have more words for you, but you didn't know what EVOO was.
I did not.
What about SCOTUS and FLOTUS?
Yeah, that's come about in the last couple of years. SCOTUS is like EVOO. It's kind of taking the first letter off of all the words involved. So SCOTUS is obviously Supreme Court of the United States.
FLOTUS.
First Lady of the United States.
POTUS.
President of the United States.
DOTUS.
That does not exist.
Donald of the United States.
Is that true?
Yes.
I have one for him, but I can't say it on the air.
There's another, I bet Kevin will know this, and maybe Bertrand. You know how people put LOL and it means laugh out loud? There's this new one that I had to look up. I had no idea. Kevin, if you know, hold your thought for a minute. Bill, do you know what SMH is?
Can you use it in a context? Like, when would it
no,
be used?
No, it's
SMH.
Like I would go, boy, Kevin's acting smart today.
Yeah.
And then I would put SMH.
I don't like that use at all.
All right.
How about Bill doesn't know this reference? SMH.
Yeah, all right. That's perfect.
Sister Mary Helen?
Definitely SMHing right now.
Shave my head?
Close.
Is it?
What are you doing to your head?
Shave. No.
What am I doing? To your head, Wendy?
Shake.
Shaking my head.
Shake my head? Is that what it means?
Shaking my head.
Oh, like, I came close.
I'm saying, boy, Bill brought up toys today.
SMH.
We are going to hippify you by the end of this
hat.
Year. No, it's not. You'll
shake
get
my
lice.
Head? No, you don't want lice. Shake my head.
It's shaking my head, correct? Steve, you were aware of the SMH?
No, I didn't know that one.
Really?
I prefer
SMH
words.
Bounty.
I had to look it up. That's all. Okay, do you know what bouquet is?
Bouquet is a bunch
not
of flowers.
Not a bouquet of flowers, but I think I'm saying it wrong. Bouquet.
Bouquet of flowers. That's, for people who are not used to getting flowers, that's how they say it. I got me a bouquet of flowers.
No.
There's a whole bunch of flowers.
B-O-K-E-H.
No, I don't know what that is at all.
This is a new word that's been added.
Is there a context by which you could use it?
Boy, you didn't use... I don't know if I'm saying it right.
Spell it out.
B-O-K-E-H. Bouquet. You are not using the bouquet right...
I don't know what this
on
is.
...on that picture.
Really? That's a sentence? Really?
What's a terrible one?
No, I would have no idea what that is.
Boy, you took that? I don't know how to use it in a sentence. Kevin, do you know what this means?
I only know it from an album title, but I just looked it up. I cheated.
At least he admitted it.
I appreciate the honesty.
I'm shaking my head.
Mm-hmm.
SMH. It's the visual quality of the out-of-focus areas of a photographic image, especially as rendered by a particular lens.
I'm glad
so like
a
fisheye lens or something where something is zoomed in.
Right.
I've
so
never.
Some is in focus, some is out. It's the out of focus part.
Yeah.
Okay. I will never need to know that. There will never be a time where I look at something and comment with that
word.
I
never heard that word before in my entire life. Ginger is now being used. That's been a
just a person with red hair. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah. That's been around since South Park kind of originated
forever.
It.
Yeah.
They didn't really originate it.
Although I don't remember as a kid, we certainly had kids with red hair.
No one called them gingers.
No one did, right? Mm-hmm. I don't remember that ever being a thing.
I didn't hear that until my kids started going to school.
And then it became more in vogue to refer to anybody with red hair as that.
Right.
But yeah. South Park had a lot to do with it because they had a kill a ginger day or do something.
Kick,
was it kill?
Right? I think it was kick, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Was it kill?
Well, someone better clarify.
Well, I don't know. What's the difference?
Well,
you don't can't kick a kid.
You should not kick a kid, but killing a kid is even worse.
I mean, if you give him a choice.
Right.
Gingers had no souls. That was really very South Park related.
Oh, no.
I know they didn't invent it because I think people called redheads gingers when Ginger and Marianne were around on...
On Gilligan's Island?
But honestly, I have a ginger...
Right.
Who hates it to be called that. But I never heard it until he started going to school. And I've seen a redhead before, Bill.
And then and then he would come home and say, other kids are calling me basically a spice. Like, I don't, like what?
Yeah, but ginger isn't even orange.
Not really. No.
I don't get it.
Shouldn't somebody with a tan be called a ginger?
Yeah, like
George Hamilton's a ginger then.
Big time.
I know.
Ping.
Ping means that's the thing with your cell phone if you're near a tower.
Right. Like, I'm going to ping you to find out where you're going after work. That's... Are you really playing tennis?
Yeah. All right. That one I knew.
Wayback Machine. Well, all right. Come on.
That's Sherman, right?
That's Sherman and Peabody.
Well, now it's in the dictionary. People have been saying that forever.
Sherman and Peabody was on in the 60s.
I know.
So just now they decided? All right.
Mumblecore. I hope that's not a dirty word because I didn't.
Did you say that on the air?
Wendy,
you can't say that on the air.
Don't do that to me.
I don't know what mumblecore is.
I should have pre-looked at
this. I don't know what that one is at all. Is that bad?
It's a style of low-budget film typically characterized by the use of non-professional actors and naturalistic or improvised performances.
Right. Oh, it's amateur. We've seen that.
Oh, is it? Does it refer to adult films, quote-unquote?
No. Okay. Not necessarily.
All right. But it's like hardcore is from adult films, but mumblecore means they're not even there's not enough of a budget to get an actor you can actually understand. Is that what they're going for?
I don't know what these words are.
All
I just know surreal was the word of the year.
That's all I need to know.
All right, and a ginger clarification. Hi, Rick.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're good.
Thank you.
I'm doing great. I came from a family of seven gingers.
But, you did?
Yeah, it's a wild thing. And we looked like we were kind of a freak show walking around into restaurants and everything.
But, do you remember the Farkle family by any chance? I don't know how old you are, Rick, but on Ronan Martin's Laughing, there was a family, a bit they did called the Farkle family, where everybody had red hair.
Yes, yes. My mother couldn't have been prouder. Because she had red hair, my father didn't, and he was not happy about the fact that he was the only one without red hair. And we all had different shades and different textures.
Wow.
And, it was pretty wild, but when I went to Europe, they would call, the men in the UK that I met would call my sister a ginger. And they would call red-headed women gingers, but they wouldn't call them ginger, like, as their name, they
right.
would say, oh, she's a ginger.
Just simply meaning they have red hair. That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's another word that's been so overused in the last year or so, vet.
Yeah.
If I hear one more person say vetting, I might just keel over.
Oh, no. That would be awful.
I know, Bill, you'd feel bad.
Are you a blue-eyed ginger? Because they say someone with red hair and blue eyes is the rarest combination, which I thought pretty much all redheads had blue eyes.
Mostly green or brown.
I'm the only one in my family and with blue eyes.
Really?
All the others have brown and green, but I'm the blue-eyed. But I call myself my eyes are more like Levi's because they have gold flecks in them, so they look like the trim on a pair of denim pants.
Are you a fashion designer? Because you should be, or an interior decorator.
No, I'm just crazy, and my mind works in strange ways.
Listening then, Rick.
But Rick, you got red hair, you got blue eyes, white skin, and gold flecks. You're like an American flag. You're like a walking American flag.
And you wouldn't believe how white I'm the whitest person you would ever meet.
Come by and show Bill.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Can I drop by and just
come on in.
Some boxers and let you see my legs?
That's all you need.
All right, Rick, you are crazy. And thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it.
I love you guys.
Thanks
Rick,
so much.
Thank you. The call got weird right around the 2:06 mark. I was watching the clock. 2:06. Call got weird. All right. A little bit of a break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. 312-981-7200 is our phone line and our text line. Wendy, you've known me for a long time, and you know this to be true. One thing that I know a lot about is fashion. I'm very invested in fashion.
That's what I love about you, your sense of
humor. Spend a lot of time in fashion. And I have a gift for picking out new fashion trends. You know,
you don't.
If something is right on the horizon, maybe it's not popular yet, but it will be popular soon. I have an uncanny knack for finding it and not going anywhere near it. So there is a website that I want to alert you to and anybody listening to that I'm serious when I tell you I really think is going to be a big deal. It's not a huge deal in the United States yet. It comes from Asia, comes from the Middle East. No, not the Middle East, the Far East. And please dial this website up on your computers, folks. And if you're driving or you don't have a computer, we'll put a link on our Facebook page, and you will also not be able to see that because you don't have a computer. It is called Jump From Paper. All one word. Well, three words melded together. Jumpfrompaper.com. I will now describe what it is, but I want you to see it to tell me if you don't think this is the coolest thing you've ever seen. They make a series of handbags and purses and luggage that all looks exactly like cartoons.
I saw some woman walking down the street with
You've seen
here.
Someone in real life already?
I swear to God, because I did a double take, and I'm like, that's kind of cool. It looks like a Blue's Clues type cartoon on a real person.
Yes. One of my daughters, Reese, saw one at her school. Somebody at college had a backpack made by Jump From Paper, and she said that she just couldn't stop looking at it because it didn't make sense because everything in the world was normal, and the backpack looked like it was from a Saturday morning cartoon, and it's just fun to look at.
All sold out.
Are they sold out already?
$99. This is the one I saw on the street. It's like an orange flat because it looks one-dimensional.
Yeah.
It's a flat, orange-flapped, beige handbag.
Yeah.
And I saw it on a woman walking down the street, and I did a double take because I couldn't really understand, is that a flat purse? And it is.
The color schemes are also in line with cartoons.
Garish.
They're garish, vibrant colors, colors that you might not normally put together unless you were living in a cartoon world, which I am. The prices on these, a little bit high.
$99 for that purse.
But go down, I don't know which page you're on, but if you look at a lot of their pricing things, $100 is one of their cheaper items.
Not expensive for a purse.
No, I guess not.
I know you don't have many purses.
I don't have any purses.
Do they make a briefcase? Because this would be perfect for you.
I don't want a briefcase. I want a car made out of this material.
No.
I want a house made out of this material. I want everything made like this. I love this.
When we were doing Morning Somewhere, I got myself this, talk about a waste of money and expensive, like a $400 Coach briefcase that I was so proud to carry around, and you brought a lunchbox in.
That's right.
As your briefcase.
Because you got to get respect in the workplace, and what better way to do that than with a Tom Corbett Space Cadet lunchbox?
What do you have in there, a pen?
and a folded piece of paper or something and your lunch.
Yeah, that would be about it.
Did you even have lunch in there or just your business papers?
Some days. Some days there was also some lunch. I'd have a juice box and some Razzles.
But seriously, if they make a briefcase, this is so up your alley.
There's not a thing on their website. Now, of course, I think their main target here is probably 16-year-old girls, I think. Right?
I saw an older woman with one.
Did you?
Yeah.
All right. I have so much respect for that older woman. But
well, I mean, she was still probably younger than me, but she wasn't a kid.
But whatever they made like this, whether it was clothes or a bicycle or whatever, I would want that because it just it doesn't make sense when you see it. You go, how can that be? How can that exist?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like you're wearing a one-dimensional paper purse.
Right, but it's fully functional.
Like it is?
Everywhere where you see a button or a zipper or a clasp or anything, that really does open. Like the backpack Reese was showing me really did open where it looked like it would open. It's just, you almost have to see it. We're trying our best to describe it. But it has to be flat, isn't it?
Or it's just painted to look like it's flat.
I think it's painted to look like it's flat, I think.
My birthday's coming up.
I know.
I really don't want one. Seriously, I know you do.
Well, I have little to no use for a purse or a backpack at this point. But really, if they made something that was of use to me, I would get it in a minute.
What about a pair of pants like that for you?
I would wear pants like that. I'd love pants like that. Terry, where's my cartoon pants? And she'd say, all your pants are cartoon pants.
Really, which ones? You could look like a flat Stanley walking around.
I'd love that. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, it's weird that you point that out. You are a fashion guru.
Right.
But I did see that just recently, somebody walking down Michigan Avenue with
here?
It.
Here?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
like
other people were
ago.
Taken by it, too. You weren't the only one just staring at it. Other people were going, what?
I didn't notice anybody else because I was staring at it because I couldn't figure out what it was.
Yeah, they're really
cool. That looks like a cartoon.
Again, the website is called Jump From Paper, but we'll put a link on our... Is it already there, Kevin? Yeah, it's already there.
The cleaning is you're supposed to scrub your bag gently with clean water or diluted mild detergent.
Oh.
Cause it's
but that's standard
plastic.
For a...
It's polyester.
Oh. The official fabric of cartoons.
But only $110.
I never hear polyester anymore. Is that still a?
Yeah, I have a polyester.
Are you wearing
scarf
polyester?
On a polyester shirt.
Oh, all right.
You'd
go up in flames if I lit a candle in here. You'd be gone.
All right. There's a book of matches in
it. No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to.
Video camera.
All right, let's see.
Videolicious.
We'll take a quick break and then more cartoon talk. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. You know, the Super Bowl, Wendy, was Sunday.
No one told me.
Yeah, it was this past Sunday. Big game, huge game, the Super Bowl. And a lot of people made interesting bets, but I have what I believe is the most interesting Super Bowl bet of all. And I kept thinking, you know, there was a time where I used to gamble quite
a
bit. I used to bet on a lot of things. And... it would have been very nerve-wracking to have picked the Falcons because that would have seemed like money in the bank, and it obviously wasn't. But think about that. You had all that money. You just go, well, I won this. I don't even have to watch this anymore. This game's over. And then
what
happened. Well, listen to this story. There's a girl, a tennis player named Jeannie Bouchard. And have you ever seen her before? She's lovely. She's a very pretty girl. She's from Canada. I think she's 22 or 23 years old. It doesn't say. Oh, yeah. She's 22 years old.
And what does she do?
She's a tennis player.
Oh, yeah. I do know her.
You've seen her.
Eugenie?
That's her formal name, Eugenie. But she just on the tour goes by Jeannie Bouchard. So she made, during the course of the game, now keep in mind, she wanted the Falcons to win. And at some point, they were up 21 points. So this guy who follows her on Twitter just is kidding and says, hey, if the Patriots win, what do you say you and I go out on a date? So you got a quarter left in the football game, and you're up by 21 points. So she said, yeah.
Looked like a safe bet.
If they win, yeah, you and I, we'll go out on a date.
Sure we will.
Well, they won, and Jeannie Bouchard is honoring that Super Bowl bet.
What a great girl.
You know... first of all, what kind of a chance is that? Because you don't know anything about this guy. I mean, you know about her because she's in the public eye, but who knows about this guy?
I'm sure it'll be chaperoned, Bill.
I would
hope so. You're not going to let her just go out with somebody. What if it's you? Or Mark Carmen, who's
Mark Carmen. I would actually volunteer to chaperone because I don't want a fellow tennis player in any kind of jeopardy. It says, it's a sure bet that tennis star Eugenie Bouchard will not be making any more Super Bowl wagers with Twitter followers. When the Atlanta Falcons were up, like I said, by 21 points during the first half on Sunday, the 22-year-old Canadian posted a tweet in support of the Dirty Birds. That's a nickname for the Falcons. One of her Twitter followers, a man named John Gerke, Google that name. Let's make sure he's on the up and up, Wendy, because I worry about a man named John Gerke, wasn't willing to follow her down that particular path and then challenged her to a friendly Super Bowl bet. It reads, "Hey, Jeannie Bouchard, if the Patriots win, we go on a date?" Question mark. Figuring that the odds of anyone, even the New England Patriots, coming back from a huge deficit would be unlikely, Bouchard agreed to the bet. All she said was sure. Because you say to yourself, this isn't going to happen.
Careful.
But Gerke, a 20-year-old marketing major at the University of Missouri, that could have played out way worse. Think about all she knows is this guy's name. All she knows is that his name is John Gerke. She doesn't know his age, doesn't know what he does for a living, doesn't know if he has any kind of a criminal record. She just says, sure. Gerke, a 20-year-old marketing major at the University of Missouri, had a feeling that Tom Brady would find a way to come back. I saw the tweets and I'm like, I wasn't assuming the game was over. This is a poorly constructed sentence. I saw the tweet and I'm like, I wasn't assuming the game was over because I knew how good the Patriots were and how good Tom Brady was. But I was like, I don't think, oh man, this sentence just goes on forever. I don't think it's over. I thought it would be funny to comment something like to just say what, like, you're crazy if you think this is over. But then now if I'm her, I back out. I hear that and I go, I'm not going out with this guy. He can't put a sentence together.
He's nervous.
He's on the Twitter. How many nervous characters are you allowed on Twitter? Doesn't it limit you to nervous characters? But you're crazy if you think this is over. But then I thought I could have more fun with it and do something else. So I thought of that. Bouchard's reactions as the Patriots came back and she realized she might possibly be going on a date with a stranger were then immortalized on her Twitter page. Now, I don't know enough about Twitter to know this, so help me. When this guy tweets her back, can everybody on her Twitter following see that?
Yes.
They can.
Yeah, unless he did a private message.
Okay.
But it didn't appear
It seemed like she was playing this out.
Yeah, you just kind of hit reply, and then her hashtag comes up.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, go on a date if the Patriots win, and she would respond.
Right.
And then his hashtag would be part of it, and she said, sure.
So at some point, now they show all of her tweets as the game goes on because she seems to be getting a little more apprehensive and nervous. And even the letters infer, OMFG, she puts at one point. I'll let you do the math on that. Then toward the end of the game, she just says, so, ... where do you live? Then as the game ended, she just put lesson learned, never bet against Tom Brady. And she will be going out with this guy, this John Gerke guy, sometime in the near future. I don't know what he looks like, but I think he's getting the better half of this deal.
She's really cute, but maybe they fall in love and get married. Wouldn't that be a story?
That would be the best possible.
That
would
be great. How old is he?
20.
She's 22. That
right.
could be a match made in heaven.
Right. They're in the same age bracket.
He follows her on Twitter?
Yeah. Let's hope that's the only place he's following her. I get a little nervous. Let's say somebody listened to us on a regular basis and there was some bet that you just say, that's a million to one shot. That's not going to happen. You wouldn't agree to something like that, would you?
No, but if I had, I would stick to my guns.
Yeah, you have to. You can't Welsh on a bet.
No.
Impossible. All right, we'll take a break. More ahead. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.